workers talk of solidarity and refuse to build weapons of war. No more will we make missiles. We're gonna do something different. And for the first time, their children were proud of their parents. Somewhere in Gaza, a little boy smiled and cried.
This is the Quality News Network. The UN Security Council met today to decide how to respond to North Korea's missile launches. With backing from the U.S. and Britain, Japan prepared a resolution demanding that nations withhold all funds, material, and technology. But Russia and China, which hold veto power, opposed sanctions in favor of a weaker statement. In Gaza City today, Palestinian militants fired more rockets into southern Israel. Meanwhile, Israeli troops moved deeper into Gaza. The military now says it will establish a security zone in the Gaza Strip after militants fired a rocket into a major Israeli city yesterday. In Baghdad, the morgue is being inundated with bodies despite last month's death of al-Qaeda leader Abu Musab al-Zarqawi. His death was expected to curb the violence, but the morgue reported it received 1,600 bodies last month, its highest monthly death toll since February. Today, a car bomb killed 6 people and wounded 17 near a mosque. In Brussels today, today's scheduled talks between Iran and the European Union about Tehran's nuclear program were rescheduled for tomorrow. Iran reportedly pulled out of today's talks because a leader of an opposition group was visiting the European Parliament. North Korea's Kim Jong-il and Venezuela's Hugo Chavez are scheduled to meet in Venezuela later this month. They're expected to craft an oil-for-arms deal to form an alliance against the U.S. In Mexico, officials are recounting the votes cast in Sunday's presidential election. Although the conservative candidate holds a slight lead, his leftist challenger is insisting that he won. The Associated Press reports that he will ignore the results of the recount because he has, quote, serious evidence of fraud. In Washington State, an Army lieutenant faces nearly 8 years in prison after refusing to deploy to Iraq. He refused on his belief that the war is illegal. In Alexandria, Virginia, President Bush spoke at a Dunkin' Donuts shop about his immigration reform bill. Meanwhile, Senate and House Republicans are holding public hearings in Philadelphia and San Diego on their versions of the bill. In Houston, NASA officials say there's no indication the space shuttle Discovery was damaged during yesterday's liftoff from Cape Canaveral. However, that finding is preliminary. Engineers have not finished reviewing the 70-minute video. In Aspen, Colorado, former Enron head Ken Lay died early today of a heart attack while vacationing with his family. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Business news is next.
In addition to producing and distributing the finest hourly newscasts in the country, the Quality News Network conducts interviews with 2006 candidates. We afford congressional and gubernatorial challengers of every political stripe the opportunity to illuminate their views and to demonstrate their character in a 20-minute network-quality interview. We perform this public service to enable voters to get a better listen to the people they might consider electing to high office. Because as Thomas Jefferson said, if the nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. If you want to know more about who is running in the November elections, go to qualitynewsnetwork.com and click on 2006 candidates. If we are to get America back on track, we need to elect people who can lead us in the right direction. Now, back to the news.
Factory orders for manufactured goods rose 0.7% in May following an April decline. The Commerce Department says more demand for petroleum and chemicals made up for a drop in orders for commercial aircraft and automobiles. Apple has released a new iMac model designed for teachers and students. Its features include a built-in video camera and software for making blogs, podcasts, and websites. It sells for about $900. Apple has been sued by some investors over its stock option grants. The company recently discovered irregularities in how those grants are issued and says it's investigating the matter. Three people face charges of trying to steal Coca-Cola drink recipes and selling them to Pepsi. They'll appear in court tomorrow. Mexican broadcaster Televisa may sell its stake in Univision to a private equity consortium that would allow the company to expand within the U.S. Hispanic market. The average price for a gallon of unleaded gasoline rose last week to $2.93 a gallon, but analysts predict another jump to at least $3 a gallon by this weekend. Oil briefly reached a record high of $75.40 a barrel in trading today. Light sweet crude settled at $75.19. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow was down 76 points at 11,152. NASDAQ down 37 at 2153. S&P 500 down 9 at 1271. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
Okay! Tokyo!
South America!
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Welcome back after our brief one-day hiatus to mark the 230th anniversary of a whole gang of liberals getting together and deciding to make themselves a new nation. Because they were liberals, you understand. Of course, you know that. Liberals built America from the ground up. Everything good that's ever happened in America happened because a liberal did it. And, of course, you know, all along the way, we've had to drag the stupid, ignorant, mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking conservatives kicking and screaming along behind us. And we build up something nice, and they come along and tear it down and go, well, see, conservatism works. And then we clean up the mess again, and a few years later, I'm the conservative who can really save America. And people go, oh, Jesus, well, yeah, okay, I mean, he's gonna put a big rock in every federal building that says, don't covet thy neighbor's oil reserves. Well, that's gotta be our guy. And another conservative comes in and makes a mess, and then another liberal has to come in and clean it up. You know, daggum, you know, we're the cleaning crew, but we're good at our job, and if you're good at it, do your job. And we gotta stay focused. And wasn't that great, the speeches that ran on the stream? I did not live up to my end because we were more tied up than we expected to be. But still, I thought we had a nice little stream's worth of programming yesterday, considering the absence. And all kudos go to our good friend and compadre, Bruce Birch, for that effort, and John Fox. So it's not just, you know, any old day after 4th of July. Oh, no. You know what it is. Why, it's Wednesday. And you know what Wednesday is. Well, Agnes knows what Wednesday is, too, but I think she forgot it was Wednesday. We had the day off yesterday, so today must be Monday, so.
Oh, no, I didn't.
The Wednesday Afternoon Discussion Club. We are going to have more to discuss on this every other Wednesday afternoon than we ever had on any other every other Wednesday afternoon.
Darn right. So, it's prayer meeting. It's prayer meeting edition. Oh. And we've got a rousing prayer meeting edition set up for you and for me. An interview coming up in the next few minutes. You know, everybody sort of stand the right way and point your toes in the right direction, put your tongue just so, and, you know, one arm up and the other foot in the bucket. And with any luck at all, we will be joined by Mr. Michael Pollan, author of The Omnivore's Dilemma, published this year. one of the single most amazing books you'll get your hands on. If you're tired of, you know, reading political theorizing and tired of, and you know, you need to send your mind in another direction once in a while, this is the book for you. The Omnivore's Dilemma. I thought when I picked this book up in April that I was going to get away from politics for a little bit, and it's genius. It's written brilliantly with great good humor and good solid science and fact-based, you know, the things that liberals and progressives really appreciate, and it turns out to be the single most political book I've read in years. So I hope if it turns out you've got questions for Mr. Pollan, he's more than happy to accept them. If you want to, I spoke with him earlier. He said if you want to call in with any questions, by all means, feel free to do so. He'll be happy to answer them. Then you know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the number 4, head on. Email, if you can't get to a phone, but you want to email in a question, I'll try to check that. And if you want to email a question, bob@headonradio.com is where the email goes to. But before we are joined by Mr. Pollan, I think... What did Willie Loman say in Death of a Salesman? Attention must be paid. So let us go to Edwin Arlington Robinson. Whenever Ken Lay went downtown, we people on the pavement looked at him. He was a gentleman from sole to crown, clean-favored and imperially slim. And he was always quietly arrayed, and he was always human when he talked. But still he fluttered pulses when he said, "Good morning." And he glittered when he walked. And he was rich, yes, richer than a king, and admirably schooled in every grace. In fine, we thought that he was everything to make us wish that we were in his place. So on we worked, and waited for the light, and went without the meat, and cursed the bread. And Kenny Lay, one calm summer night, went home and put a bullet through his head. Now, obviously, that's actually Richard Corey by Edwin Arlington Robinson, but it was the first thing that came to mind when I heard the news today that Ken Lay wouldn't be going to prison, but instead to hell. Now, from the other end of the spectrum, we have commentary by our good friend and one of the best satirists that I've run across in ages. And that is our good friend Eugene Finerman. He sent me something noted as your recommended daily allowance of obituaries, which he began noting or cutting and pasting from the article. Enron founder Kenneth Lay dies at 64, Dateline Houston. Enron Corp. founder Kenneth Lay, who was convicted of helping perpetuate one of the most sprawling business frauds in U.S. history, has died of a heart attack in Colorado. He was 64. And Mr. Finerman goes on to note, and here is the coroner's report issued by the White House 3 days earlier. Quote, after suffering a heart attack brought about by his allergic reaction to bees and shellfish, both of which were inadvertently included in a box of chocolates that he evidently force-fed himself, Mr. Lay drowned in a hot tub, according to the 10 witnesses who saw it. The bite marks on Mr. Lay were caused by the piranhas accidentally in the hot tub. An Amish ambulance was immediately summoned, but by the time the carriage arrived from Pennsylvania, Mr. Lay had died. C.C., the late Jeffrey Skilling, the late Jack Abramoff, and the very close to being late Scooter Libby. Or as others have said, guys, let that be a lesson to you. You know, the days go by and weeks go by and months, and I see these things and I point them out as I go along, and I... Can we get any more Soviet? I mean, this is stuff out of the time of my growing up. Oh, Mr. Andropov hasn't been seen in weeks, but he's said to be in great spirits, and the next day he's dead. And the political prisoners get shuffled off to the gulag. And I think about Lieutenant Aaron Watata, who has been confined to base, muzzled before he was even charged, can't speak even to his family now, only occasionally to his lawyers while he's in lockdown. Weirder and weirder and weirder. So I don't want to take the break at this point in time. We are joined on the phone at this moment, as I promised earlier, by Michael Pollan, author of The Omnivore's Dilemma. Mr. Pollan, are you with us, sir?
I am indeed, Bob. Hello.
Hello. It is a signal honor to talk to you. This is I'm a book freak. I'm a big time reader, and this is I feel like I'm talking to a beetle. I started out by reading The Botany of Desire, your book of a couple of years ago,
and
was completely taken, just blown away by the way that you were able to turn the world on its ear, so to speak, in order to examine your topic. And you've done it again with The Omnivore's Dilemma. Is it safe to this is a look at frankly a topic I don't think a lot of other people have examined or would examine. What motivated you to look at the food supply the way you did?
Well, it became clear to me that we were very confused about this most basic human activity, which is figuring out what to eat. And this is something that doesn't trouble a lot of other creatures. You know, they know what they're supposed to eat, and they just go ahead and eat it, and they're healthy, and they're fine. But over the last several years in America, we seem to have lost our way. And we have to read experts to figure out what to eat. We have to listen to the Surgeon General or look at food pyramids. And I was curious to know how things got so off track about something so simple. And basically, the book is an attempt to answer a very straightforward question, which is, what should we have for dinner? The inspiration, though, really came back in the fall of 2002 when... You'll remember the Atkins craze.
Oh, yes.
In America. And overnight, an entire nation changed the way it eats. Suddenly, bread and pasta were considered toxic substances.
Which for the first 2 million years of human evolution, had been the staff of life.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, wonderful foods that have kept people alive for thousands of years, suddenly, you know, deemed evil. And but what was odd is, you know, cultures do not change the way they eat that quickly, as a rule. Cuisine, food, is a very conservative thing in most places. It's the last thing that an immigrant will change, is the way he eats. So how is it that we Americans could change on a dime? And that's really what got me started, is trying to answer that question, how we had lost that kind of steadying influence of a set of food mores and manners. And really, that took me back. The history took me back to, you know, post-war America, when we began industrializing our food supply. We've changed the way we eat in this country more in the last 50 years than in the previous 1,000. And a lot of that has to do with discovering a way to sell food industrially.
Is that us? Is that just us, or is that the entire world?
Well, it's becoming the entire world, although we really led this movement. America pioneered fast food. It's our export now to the rest of the world. But basically, it begins here. Feedlots for beef and chicken, the whole kind of mechanization of agriculture, the invention of chemical agriculture, synthetic fertilizer, although that was invented in Germany, was adopted here. So we really have been in the forefront in terms of transforming our food into an industrial product. And we're still dealing with the consequences of those changes. We're eating some novelties today that the human body did not evolve to eat. And that, I think, partly explains all the problems we're having around food. I mean, an epidemic of obesity, an epidemic of diabetes, cardiovascular disease. Many of these things can be traced to the changes in our food supply since World War II.
Well, you, there are a couple of different directions I want to take right off the bat, Michael, I fear this conversation may become a spider web instead of a linear progression. But on the one hand, you know, you're right; it's the most basic question. What's for dinner? And, of course, the National Beef Board has told us for about 15, 20 years with a beautiful baritone bass voice over twanging guitars and visuals of outdoor cooking fire. Beef, it's what's for dinner. On the other hand, you know, you talk about the rise in the disease culture. I'm here in West Virginia, and we're very connected to our roots.
Uh-huh.
And many of my forebears, if you go back two generations or so, lived into their 90s.
Yeah.
And, you know, they worked like just incredible work lives, whether it be on the farm or in a coal mine or whatever. If the black, you know, if the black lung or the slate fall didn't get them or didn't get hurt in a farming accident, they lived up into their late 80s and 90s, and they did this eating biscuits that were loaded with lard.
Mm-hmm.
Pork and chicken and turkeys and cattle and fish from the local streams. And at first glance, it seems like it wouldn't be that much of a different diet from what we have today. But that's not true, is it?
Well, no. I mean, even that all that pork and chicken and beef might look the same. It's not the same food because we have changed the way those animals lived. We've taken them off of farms and we've put them on vast factory farms or feedlots, where they get a diet that they're often not accustomed to or evolved to eat, such as lots of corn and other meat byproducts in the case of beef, which are, you know, they're herbivores. They're meant to be vegetarians. We're feeding them a lot of things that aren't vegetarian.
We've perverted their food cycle.
Well, exactly. And, you know, what you feed the animals you eat, you're eating too, and that's going to change your diet. So that once you feed that kind of food to beef cattle, plus antibiotics and growth hormones, that's a very different food. And in fact, a lot of the problems that we associate with eating red meat are not intrinsic to eating red meat, but corn-fed and pharmaceutical-fed red meat. So, you know, we have to pay attention to the way our animals live, because if they're not healthy and if they're not getting a healthy diet, they're not going to be a healthy diet for us.
And not to over-romanticize things, but, you know, the Native Americans, I'm told, or by what I've read, they used to reverence the food that they had to kill to eat. We don't have any level of reverence, and very few of us give any level of thought to where that steak has come from.
I think you're exactly right, Bob. I mean, the fact is we're very disconnected, you know. Meat comes from the supermarket. It doesn't come from an animal. We have lost track of the fact that in every case there are other species involved, other species with which we have a very deep and almost spiritual relationship. And for us, though, you know, when you have a civilization as complicated as ours, everything's in its own box. And even when you go to the supermarket now, you never see a butcher working on a carcass. You know, he's getting a box of beef from the Midwest, and even the steaks no longer have bones in them. I mean, it's just kind of lumps of protein in different colors.
That's fascinating. You should mention that. I have to move heaven and earth every Christmas to get a standing rib roast for Christmas dinner because the bones are gone.
Well, the butchers are gone, and that's really a big part of it. And, you know, that process of watching the butcher work reminded you of this is where the animal comes from, this is where that cut of meat comes from, this is what a standing rib roast is when it's part of an animal, all of which teaches a certain amount of respect or reverence for the animal and a sense of sacrifice. You know, that's why people used to say grace around the meal. They had a real sense of gratitude, and that gratitude was toward the, you know, if you're religious, it was toward God for providing the food, but it was also for the animals and their sacrifice and nature and what nature has given us. And all that has been lost, and the culture of fast food, you know, discourages us from thinking about it. You know, when my kid used to eat chicken nuggets, I remember asking him once, so does it taste like chicken? And he looked at me like I was crazy. And he said, no, Dad, it's a nugget. It has its own taste. It tastes like a nugget.
It's some sort of platonic ideal of nuggetness.
So I realized then that he didn't know that this thing originally was a chicken, and I made an effort to acquaint him with that fact.
Well, our kid, we got off the nugget thing several years ago, Michael. And it's one of those little serendipitous things. We were sitting at McDonald's, and one of our children had tired of his nuggets, so my wife Agnes reached over and picked it up and bit into it. At which point, she screamed in pain. Because a jagged shred of metal had just driven up through a filling in one of her teeth into the nerve.
Oh, my God.
And, you know, that was you know, because at that point it's beyond even arguing that parts is parts, because there's no shreds of metal in a chicken.
Not in a real-life chicken, nope.
And wow. And you describe this process, and I'd like, if you wouldn't mind, I don't want to give away the book, because, and this is a dense and wonderful book that's just filled with stuff that obviously I am still processing, yay, verily, 3 months after having read it. But the symbiosis between what you and I would think of as corn and what is commonly grown in this country as corn, and what that corn does in relation to cattle, pork, and beef. Could you take a run at that for a minute?
Yeah, sure. You know, one of the big surprises, I mean, the book is organized into a series of food chains that we're a part of, and one of them is the industrial food chain. And in each case, I started with, or actually I ended with a meal, but I tried to follow a meal all the way back to where a meal begins. And because we have to remember, and we do forget, everything we eat begins with photosynthesis. Some plant in a field somewhere converting solar energy and water and minerals into food, carbohydrates. And we either eat those directly or we eat them, we eat the animals that eat those carbohydrates. And I followed industrial food, that is to say, everything in your supermarket, all the processed food in the supermarket, McDonald's, KFC, all that kind of stuff. And I wanted to see where that food began. Because, you know, even a Twinkie, even something as weird and far from nature as a Twinkie, begins in a field with nature. The interesting thing to me was I kept ending up, when I followed this food, whether it was the chicken nuggets, the beef, even the French fries, I kept ending up in a cornfield in the American Middle West. And it has, over the last 40, 50 years, corn has basically taken over our food supply. When we're eating, we're mostly eating corn. Corn that has been turned into beef, chicken, or pork. Corn that has been turned into high fructose corn syrup and then into soda and milkshakes. Corn that has been turned into milk. Corn that has been turned into any number of the very obscure multisyllabic ingredients on a package of processed food. And this was, I had no idea that we were eating corn as religiously as the Irish were eating potatoes back in the 19th century.
More so, really.
More so. You know, and if you actually put any bit of your flesh, hair or blood or fingernail, through a mass spectrometer, a machine that can read the basic elements, you will find that most of what you consist of now is corn, if you grew up in this country over the last 30 or 40 years. And that was a real shock to me. And I spent a lot of time in this book kind of following a bushel of corn from a farm in Iowa into that whole system and how it gets converted into everything we eat.
But you hit some brick walls, didn't you?
Well, you can't go everywhere. ADM and Cargill are two of the biggest processors of corn. They're involved in every aspect of the corn economy, and they are not very friendly to journalists, and they would not let me watch what they do to corn after they buy it from the farmers. And I think that's a shame. I think anyone who's trying to feed you who won't let you in the kitchen, you know, may well have something to hide. And frankly, any kind of food where they won't let me in the kitchen, and I'm speaking metaphorically or literally, is not food I want to eat.
No. Now let's be clear about something, Michael. You know, we're throwing the word corn around. Now, I've got a little, well, most years I've got a little garden. I mostly plant it to feed the deer, as it turns out.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, I might raise some Illinois Chief or some Pencil Cob or some,
That's a different kind of corn entirely. That's,
right.
You're talking about sweet corn.
Yeah.
And I'm talking really about feed corn. This is corn that actually isn't edible unless you're a chicken. It is basically an industrial raw material. It's the corn fields you see growing through the corn belt or on a dairy farmer's field. It's not sweet. It's very starchy. They're very big cobs. And that this is, it's number two yellow corn is what it's called in the commodity world. And
so when we see these waving fields of 6 foot high stalks of corn, that's what we're looking at.
Yeah, we're looking at feed corn, and that's a raw material that you can put through what's called a wet mill and turn it into any number of ingredients from ascorbic acid to high fructose corn syrup, or you can crush it and feed it to animals, or you can turn it into plastic, or the latest scam is turn it into ethanol. You know, we produce so much corn in this country. There's a huge oversupply, 11 billion bushels a year. And a lot of our food system and indeed economy now is dedicated to figuring out clever ways to get rid of that corn. And now that we're eating as much of it as we can as humans, and getting very fat and sick from it, we're now feeding it to our cars. That's basically the latest corn disposal scheme.
Well, that brings me around to something. You paint a horrifying picture of feedlot life for beef cattle that are just being, I mean, they can't eat this corn without getting sick. I got the idea reading your book that no matter how lovely that New York strip or ribeye or whatever I was looking at in the grocery store, no matter how beautiful it looked, and oh my God, that'll be good on the grill, that probably came from a cow that at some point in time was sick.
Well, you know, low-level illness is the condition of most cows on feedlots, and the reason is that they're eating corn, which they can't really digest very well.
But I remember that the Charlton Heston vehicle, Soylent Green, you know, we're on the feedlot too, Michael.
Well, in a sense, we are. You know, we're eating processed food that we were not evolved to eat, and that's never good for you, at least not for too long. And the pleasures of fast food are very fleeting. And, you know, after being on feedlots, I don't really eat industrial meat anymore. I really confine myself to grass-fed beef. There are a lot of farmers doing really good work just raising their cows the old-fashioned way on grass.
And does it taste different?
Yeah, it does taste different. It's leaner, so you got to cook it more carefully. It'll get tough if you overcook it. You've got to really leave it rare. But I think it tastes wonderful, and you don't feel full when you eat it. It's a much lighter food in many ways, and it's a lot better for you. Plus, you know that the animal had a decent life, and you know, just once you've seen animals standing around on feedlots, 40,000 of them crammed into a couple acres, standing, you know, up to their knees in their own manure, eating food that's giving them a huge tummy ache all the time. You really can't enjoy that ribeye, or you know.
Can we call this what it is? They're not little. They're great big industrial bovine concentration camps.
Well, they are. They're filthy, miserable cities of cows, and I liken them to medieval cities because there's no sewage disposal system, so their manure just hangs around in these lagoons, and they stink to high heaven. And the dust in the air will make you sick in the summer. It is fecal dust. And, you know, it's just no way for animals to live, and it's no way for people to eat. And, you know, most of this, though, is offstage to most Americans. We don't see these anymore. They're no longer in Chicago. They're in the high plains where no one ever goes, where there are very few people living anymore. And so it's invisible to us. And one of my goals in this book was to make the food system that feeds us visible to us so that we might choose from some of the very good alternatives that are now out there.
But by the same token, the second portion of your book deals with the organic world.
Yeah.
And while there's a lot to admire about it, industrial food production is even creeping its way into that.
And the corn system is creeping its way into industrial. You've got now some, not all, but some organic dairy is coming off of huge feedlots where those cows do not ever go out on the grass and graze, as you imagine an organic cow is doing, but simply stand around a feedlot eating organic corn all the time. Is that a lot better than the conventional? I don't think so. It may not have any chemicals and it may not have any hormones in it, but it's still not what it should be. So, you know, I don't want to generalize because there are organic farmers doing it right, but some of the big brands have fallen into the temptation of cutting corners, basically. And I think that's a shame. I mean, organic, you know, another set of surprises for me was how big organic has gotten. And in the process, organic has lost some of its soul. You can still rest assured when you see that label that this food is grown without synthetic chemicals, but you shouldn't be so sure that the animal had a much better life.
Well, you go into great detail in the second part of the book about describing polyface farms not too far from where I am, over in Virginia. And I was really impressed by the level of hard work that it took the proprietors there to do the job, and the spirituality that they brought to it. But I wondered, you know, okay, I've got an acre of ground here. is, you know, and we plant a fairly decent sized garden every year. Is it possible for me to somehow tap into organic and tap into getting off the industrial food grid when I do my garden? Or do I have to be a full time operation like Polyface Farms is?
No, not at all. I mean, I think actually the home gardener can have a lot of independence from this food system, and it's a big part of the solution is people growing more of their own food. I mean, look, you know, when you're talking about the nutrition of produce, freshness is really one of the key factors. And what's more fresh than, you know, picking your food right before you cook it, which the home gardener can do.
Oh, there's such a difference. Now, let me ask you one more question. We've talked a little bit about the problems that are brought on by this industrial corn. What about the other twin, or, you know, in most industrial farming in the country, there's two things. There's corn and there's soy.
Soybean, yeah.
Now, you know, a lot of people who might be progressive or liberal, like folks who, like me and folks who listen to this show, oh, well, soy, and you get all warm and fuzzy because it's tofu and we can make chili out of it. But it's not all sunshine and violets with that either, is it?
No, you know, soy has been a big push over the last 30 or 40 years, pushing to put soy in more different foods. And it's a good source of protein that is not animal protein, and that has its virtues. But, you know, a lot of it is genetically modified at this point. Most of the soybean crop is genetically modified. And if you don't want to eat genetically modified food, you really have to get organic soy. But... you know, there are people who believe we're eating too much soy, and that soy is not something we have been used to as a culture. And also, the Asians eat soy in a very different way. You know, all their soy products are either cooked or fermented, mostly fermented, so that, you know, soy sauce, tofu too, goes through a process that makes it a lot more digestible. But we're eating soy isoflavones, soy protein isolate. And these are very new foods, and the jury's still out on whether, you know, we actually absorb protein from them or there really is.
Well, a lot of these things are also marketed to women for pre- and post-menopausal remedies. As a guy, that gives me pause.
Yeah, well, you know, they act like estrogen in the body, and some people feel that we're getting altogether too many estrogen-like substances, both from our food supply, but also from all the chemicals we're exposed to. And all that estrogen may possibly explain girls going into puberty younger than they ever have before, and low sperm counts among males. I mean, there's a lot of questions around that kind of estrogenic effect in the environment. I'm not saying soy is all of it, but it's part of it.
Well, so you mentioned the home gardener. You paint a very disturbing picture of food in America, and I think you set out to do it, but it seemed that there were questions posed within the book that even you didn't get a satisfactory answer to, and that is, do you break out of it? Do you wait for the thing to collapse in on itself and have three generations of sick people to show for it? What's the next step?
I actually think there's a lot of hopefulness in the book because over the last few years, we have seen the rise of alternative food chains in many, many places around the country. There is a very vibrant farmers market movement. There's a movement towards CSAs. These are subscription farms where basically you sign up with a farmer for the year, you pay him up front or by the month, and you get a box of produce every week, the freshest, best stuff he's got. I'm a member of one of those. We also have organic food is become very common and a lot cheaper than it used to be. Walmart is about to start offering organic food in a big way,
which just makes my eyes roll back in my head. But
well, you know, we'll see. The jury's out whether that's going to be good news or bad news. Knowing Walmart, I'd be really skeptical of whether they'll do it in a way that will preserve the land and help American farmers. I'm afraid they're going to source it all from China. And I'm not sure Chinese organic food is going to be as good as American organic food. It's a very polluted country, and the water on the farms is very polluted. But there's also this movement toward pasture-based farming, the kind of stuff I describe in the book. There's a lot of people doing very good grass-fed livestock, pastured eggs and poultry. So that's the good news. You can get on the web, and I encourage listeners who are interested to look at my website, where I've got a whole page of resources. under links.
And that's michaelpollan.com, right?
Yeah, and thank you. And it you will see that there are websites there where you can type in your zip code, and it will tell you exactly what farmers in your zip code are selling to you, that you can visit or call or order. And so I think it's the best of times and the worst of times in the American food system. You have a tottering industrial system that is failing to do what a food system should do, which is keep a population healthy. On the other hand, it is, you were talking about how Soviet things are going.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in the food system, things are getting really Soviet. You have a big centralized food system, but there's all this ferment around the edges. And by the end of the Soviet Union, more than half of the food was coming from small farms and individual gardens, not from the big collectivized farms. And arguably, something similar is happening in this country. We are checking out on the industrial food system increasingly, and these impromptu alternatives that the government has nothing to do with are rising up on the margins, and they may replace the big food system someday.
I hope. I personally hope you're right. Michael, what's next for you? Is there another book in the works?
Not at the moment. I'm doing some more writing on food. I'm looking at the whole question of health and food and nutrition for some essays I'm doing. I write for the New York Times Magazine, so I'm doing some stuff for them. And I've been going around the country for the last couple of months talking about these issues. I find that there's a very big audience that's eager to have this conversation and look at food as a political and environmental question in a way they never have before. So that's what's keeping me busy.
Well, I thank you very much for your time. I've certainly enjoyed the conversation. Goodness me, I enjoyed the book, and I didn't mean to make it sound like it was a total downer, because it wasn't. It is.
It's a wake-up call, and there's a lot of bad news in it, but I think there's some good news too.
Well, and following on the heels of Super Size Me and Fast Food Nation, I felt like this was sort of the science of the agricultural. The agricultural side of the dilemma, and you present it very, very concisely and cogently, and frankly, I admire a lot of the stomach it took to get through it.
That's a good word for it. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael Pollan. Best of luck, and I hope we'll hear from you again sometime.
Well, I hope so. Great talking to you, Bob.
Good talking to you. Bye now.
Bye.
Again, our new friend Michael Pollan, author of The Omnivore's Dilemma. Available by John, Bruce, do we have a bookseller link up? I don't think so. So go through the bookseller link at whiterosesociety.org. It is a means by which you can help support some of the things that make the horn happen. Read this book. Again, I don't have authors on all the time, and I only have authors on that I think that you might get something out of, because I did. I'm not transposing my views onto you or anything like that. But this is, my God, when you see the detail into which Michael Pollan goes, he was literally, I mean, it was, there are places out there that process corn that treat corn like homeland security. Now, marry this up with the fact that we have, for the first time in 50 years last year, we imported more food than we grew. I mean, this is the part where Joseph has the dream while he's working for Potiphar about some sort of desert animal that ate another desert animal, and there one was fat and one was skinny, and one said this was just right, or whatever. But it all presaged famine coming to the land of Egypt. Well, baby, we're the land of Egypt. And we are eating poison, and I'm not talking, oh yeah, processed sugar, white poison, yeah, that may be true, but no, this is, this doesn't require dogma, this doesn't require true believing. Anybody, and I am one of them, who has ever had stew or chili made out of deer as opposed to hamburger knows that there is a tremendous difference between the two. And the difference lies in the fact that the deer gets to eat what the deer is supposed to eat. You remember the Twilight Zone episode where the really tall aliens came to Earth and they promised, you know, the bombs won't go off anymore, war will end, it's all going to be happiness and paradise here, and hey, we're giving free trips to the home planet. And they carry around this book written in their language. And someone finally translates it. Or translates the cover, and it's called To Serve Man. And, you know, they're here to serve man. They're just pure altruistic aliens. And the very end, you know, being a Twilight Zone episode, the very end of the thing is where the one of the characters is going up the ramp onto the spaceship to visit the home planet, and the other guy comes running up, and he says, scream! He says, my God, stop! That book, To Serve Man, it's a cookbook. Submitted for your approval. We're living that. The only thing is, the aliens haven't found us yet. I don't know. Go over to Rents.com or their, you know, George Norrie or whatever. You know, there's probably a story over there about how we're being bombarded by rays that make us raise really ugly corn to feed to cattle that don't have any business eating it to feed to us so that we can be eaten two generations hence. And that's part of the chemtrails thing. I mean, I'm making light of some stuff, and I probably shouldn't. But you read this book, and you will not go through the grocery store the same way. Here in the hinterlands of West Virginia, we have not gotten to where I can buy grass-fed beef. When that day comes, I will. Personally, if I had a little bit more land, I'd like to raise my own. Because on the one, you know, on the one hand, there are some people who, if they get introduced to what's actually going on in the food chain, they get all squishy and go, "I'm never going to eat anything more advanced than celery." And on the other hand, there are people who just don't care. Get me another burger. I tasted a McDonald's burger not too. It don't taste like beef. You'd go to Walmart, and it said, yes, I've seen it. I apologize. I'll say my, I'll do my penance after the program, okay? But you look at hamburger in Walmart, and it says, with beef flavor added. It's beef! It don't need no beef flavor. It's beef! What does that tell you about the quality of cow that it's coming from? And what was the story yesterday? Canada announces, we found another mad cow. You know, apparently it was standing out on the steps of Alberta, just bellowing, I am so pissed off. No. But they said, well, you know, it was an old cow. It was not well. It was feeling very poorly. And it was born before 1997 when we passed the ban saying that you couldn't feed cow to cow anymore. I mean, we are honest to God, 20 years away from Soylent Green as people. Aren't we? I fear we are. So, The Omnivore's Dilemma by Michael Pollan. Check out michaelpollan.com. And by the way, that's Pollan. Michael, Pollan.com. If there are resources you can utilize near you to sort of get off the industrial food grid, I think you'll find yourself glad that you did. Not that I'm giving orders. Let's take a break. When we come back, your phone calls are welcome. Of course, we've got another interview coming up in the next hour. We're going to be joined by the president of the West Virginia Education Association. They're meeting to try to figure out how teachers in America can help children sort of, well, I hesitate to say get away from George Bush and his No Child's Behind Left business, but this is the kind of stuff they worry about. And we will hear from them, hear from the president of the West Virginia Education Association, calling live from their convention after the top of the hour. But in the meantime, let's chat a little bit if you want to. 877-443-2366. It's Prayer Meeting Edition. I'm Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
There's a place on the web you can go where everything is so topical you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. Clyde, Wally, and Dookie are there working hard for you every day. It's a place where you can go to raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. DUBYAD40.com. So stop on by. The 101st Fighting Keyboardists of Kansas are ready to hear your opinion. There are topics of news, current events, and great humor. So let Clyde, Wally, and Dookie know that you're a working person too. WD40.com. Stop on by.
You know, the president came out and talked about the Iraq War and how he had a strategy to win the peace. I have some exclusive audio. This is actually him preparing for the speech in front of the mirror. This is him laying out the strategy for Iraq.
That was the most coherent thing I've heard him say in ages, man.
What? You know, if he really spoke that way, it would be so much better for us all. Because at least then we would know that he's an incoherent bastard. We could have him locked up.
And that's just a taste of what Bruce and I got up to last weekend. Come and join us next weekend, Saturday night, 10 p.m. Eastern. To get the stream details, go to fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
Want to fight childhood asthma? Then fight it with a scrub brush and a hot soapy towel. Even in the neatest and tidiest homes, if there's so much as a crumb to eat or a drop to drink, household pests like bugs and mice will do all that they can to get it. Creepy crawlies like bugs and mice are unpleasant enough as it is, but they're more than just a nuisance for kids with asthma because they can actually trigger an asthma attack. So, give them a whole lot of nothing. Sweep up crumbs, wipe down tables, scrub dishes before they pile up in the sink, and store leftovers in plastic bags or bowls. Don't leave them so much as one tidbit or nibble, and you can stop a childhood asthma attack before it starts. Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org, because no child should feel like a fish out of water. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Welcome to Wednesday Night Prayer Meeting with your host, Brother Bob Kincaid. Put your hands together, raise your eyes to the light, and welcome him. The truth will set you free. And now, here is Brother Bob Kincaid.
Amen, amen, and amen. 7 minutes before the hour, let's go to the phones. Our good friend Ben is calling from Elgin, Illinois. Hey, Ben, welcome to the show. Thanks.
Hey there, Bob.
How you doing?
You know, I'm not sure I'd eat venison either.
What, mad deer disease?
Yes, called chronic wasting disease.
That's true.
And it's pretty much equivalent to scrapie or mad cow. The brains of these critters turn to mush.
Yeah, and I try to make it a policy not to eat brains.
Well, but, you know, it's any bit of nerve, and, you know, it's nerves go all through the flesh.
True.
And it's really hard to completely denerve any piece of meat.
Well, I have no doubt that we have probably contributed to that as well, because it started in the elk population and has spread to the white-tailed deer population. It's present in the squirrel population as well. A guy in West Virginia some 10, 15 years ago died of mad squirrel disease.
Yep.
Because he loved his squirrel brains and gravy. I'm sorry, I know, but, you know, old-timers.
But, you know, more and more I'm beginning to think, you know, I don't think a potato ever hurt me.
Not unless it was genetically modified. And, you know, McDonald's and Lay's tried to slip those into the population, but they got caught.
Yep. You know. Speaking of Lay, there's really one good thing about the passing of Ken Lay, at least for him.
Okay.
he'll never have to worry about winter heating bills again.
Was that one just off the cuff, or have you been working on that one?
I've been working on that one. I think it's warm enough where he is now.
I think it's, yeah, plenty warm.
Yep.
And the sad thing is nobody, he doesn't get a cut on the gas bill.
Oh, I'm just hoping they're going to make him mine the coal.
Well, you know, it would be sufficient to me if I was just sure that, like, you know, like Malloy often says, that some little, if I knew for sure that some little demon had already pinched his head off and was using it for a soccer ball.
That Mike's going to be fun tonight, I have a feeling.
Oh, Mike's fun all the time.
Yeah, but I mean especially tonight.
Yeah.
Because he's just coming back after a long vacation.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got this to deal with.
Yeah. Oh, not, you know, not just that, you know, but I mean, there's North Korea, for God's sakes. You know, we had our 4th of July, and we're pissed off at Kim Jong-il for shooting off rockets for us. Yeah.
Well, and, you know, and the thing is, you know, here's the case where you can see the complete lack of cojones on the part of our esteemed leader here. You know, This is a provocation, an extreme provocation from a country that we're actually still at war with.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, true.
We have a truce with North Korea. We never signed a peace treaty.
No.
We have all the authorization to go to war with them we like. Absolutely 100% legal authorization to go to war with them. And, you know, he's squandered our military on Iraq, and here we have a real threat. I mean, a real threat. I honestly think if I were president of the United States, North Korea would have to be my number one priority, because they're crazy. You know, Kim Jong-il is nuts.
Yeah, and he has a population that he has starved into submission.
Yeah, and, you know, I really think that if, you know, the case should be made that we should talk to our good friends, the Chinese, and they should start in the north, and we should start in the south, and we should meet in the middle.
Well, didn't we try that once?
Well, yeah, except they were fighting us then.
Well, yeah. And that's the way that often happens. But, you know, the Chinese should be nervous as hell about Kim Jong-il because, you know, Kim Jong-il thinks that the Chinese aren't good commies anymore.
Exactly, and they are actually nervous as hell about him. And, you know, I just really think that, you know, a little bit of leadership would take care of him for good.
Well, that's very possible. It's very possible. But, you know, any way you slice it, and I figure we'll probably wind up talking about it sometime later tonight or possibly tomorrow, the new Seymour Hersh article. Have you seen that, Ben?
No, I haven't.
He lays out some stuff with regard to, you know, because lest we forget, Iran. You talk about, you know, leaving us vulnerable a bit against madmen and things like that. I mean, that's a truly insane, crazy person who happens to lead a nuclear country is really the only threat that the United States really faces.
Yeah.
No terror. I mean, terrorist attacks. Yeah, okay. They're a nuisance and they're tragic and, but they can never do any substantial amount of damage to the United States.
Correct.
Crazy guy with nukes? Yeah, they can do that. And so the American military is squandered on Iraq. You know, here's Kim Jong-il, who knows that, you know, there's no better time to poke George Bush in the kidneys with a sharp stick than now.
Yep.
And meanwhile, we're in a position, and I've got the excerpt highlighted from the Seymour Hersh article. There are conservatives who say that now is the, okay, yeah, they think we're vulnerable. Now's the time to attack Iran.
Yep.
And, you know, cue the part where we all run screaming into the night.
But, yeah, you might think twice about eating venison.
Well, I haven't done it in a long time, but, I mean, there's whether it's venison or bison, buffalo, whatever, you know. There's a big difference, and you can tell it when you compare the two, that this industrialized beef is not literally fit for human consumption.
Nope.
Ben, thanks so much. We're up at the top of the hour. Got to hit the news.
You take care, sir.
All right, bye now.
Bye.
And for the record, I never killed Bambi. All right? Oh, no. No. I'm a terrible shot. Right. I cook it. I don't kill it. Yeah, they laugh at oh, look, he's got the gun. Stand still. If you move, he might walk a bullet into you. But if you stand perfectly still, Bob can't hurt you. Yeah. Anyway, the news is next. 877-443-2366. I'm Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
The rope that's wrapped around me is cutting through my skin, and the doubts that I've surrounded me are finding their way in. I keep it close.
A statement with weaker language. That opposition was voiced during today's meeting in which Japan prepared a resolution demanding sanctions. In Gaza City today, Palestinian militants fired more rockets into southern Israel. Meanwhile, a Hamas militant was killed and seven others wounded when Israeli troops fired on a beach in northern Gaza. In Mexico, officials are recounting the votes cast in Sunday's presidential election. Although the conservative candidate holds a slight lead, his leftist challenger is insisting that he won. The Associated Press reports that he will ignore the results of the recount because he has, quote, serious evidence of fraud. In Brussels, today's scheduled talks between Iran and the European Union were unexpectedly canceled and rescheduled for tomorrow. Iran reportedly pulled out of today's talks because a leader of an opposition group was visiting the European Parliament. Both sides are expected to discuss a Western incentives package that leaders hope will convince Iran to halt its nuclear program. In Washington, a congressional panel says Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld has until July 14th to hand over documents related to the abuse probe at Abu Ghraib prison. That demand comes after he failed to respond to a previous request. The panel is reportedly seeking information on a soldier who said he suffered retaliation after he blew the whistle about the abuse. In Alexandria, Virginia today, President Bush spoke at a Dunkin' Donuts shop to promote his immigration reform bill. Meanwhile, Senate and House Republicans began holding public hearings in Philadelphia and San Diego. In New Jersey, the state could be losing up to $20 million a day. That's because the state budget crisis has prompted the closure of a dozen Atlantic City casinos. In Houston, NASA officials say there's no indication the Space Shuttle Discovery was damaged during yesterday's liftoff from Cape Canaveral. In Aspen, Colorado, former Enron head Ken Lay died early today of a heart attack while vacationing with his family. He was going to be sentenced in October and faced 20 to 30 years in prison after being convicted of fraud charges. In Miami today, a judge denied bond for six men accused of plotting terrorist activities, including bombing the Sears Tower. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
A new study shows liver abnormalities in 40% of those who took the maximum doses of Tylenol for 2 weeks. That raises concerns about liver damage in those who take the recommended amounts of the painkiller. Factory orders for manufactured goods rose 0.7% in May, following an April decline. The Commerce Department says more demand for petroleum and chemicals made up for a drop in orders for commercial aircraft and automobiles. Southwest Airlines has raised its fares for the fourth time this year. Most one-way trips are now an extra $3 to $10. Amazon.com has launched a new toy and baby store following the breakup of its partnership with Toys R Us. The two retailers had sued each other over contract issues. Apple has released a new iMac model designed for teachers and students. It features software for making blogs, podcasts, and websites, and sells for about $900. Apple has been sued by some investors over its stock option grants. The company recently discovered irregularities in how those grants are issued. Three people face charges of trying to steal Coca-Cola drink recipes and selling them to Pepsi. They'll appear in court tomorrow. Oil briefly reached a record high of $75.40. Light sweet crude settled at $75.19. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow was down 76 points, NASDAQ down 37, S&P 500 down 9. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Somebody turn the teletype off. There are no teletypes anymore. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On. Oh, mercy. Your nightly confrontation, or evening, your daily, your confrontation with the facts, and just the facts. And we are joined at this moment by Charlie DeLauder. He's president of the West Virginia Education Association in convention with the National Education Association, meeting at present over 9,000 delegates representing teachers, education support professionals, higher education faculty, at their general annual meeting. Mr. DeLauder, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Bob. I appreciate the offer to come on.
Oh, it is absolutely my pleasure. I bet you didn't even know that America's Other Liberal Network was born in West Virginia, did you?
No, I did not. I guess it goes along with the teletype machine. But I knew there weren't any more teletype machines.
Oh, you know, I started in radio back when you actually had to change the. We had one of those iron lung ones from the UPI, and you had to, and you couldn't change. It was worse than fooling with toner in a Xerox machine. I promise.
Well, like what we've been dealing with this week. We've been working on the No Child Left Behind legislation that is up for reauthorization next year in 2007.
Well, I imagine that's got to be a highly frustrating experience.
It certainly is. It's like changing the toner in the Xerox machine.
Yeah, and everything comes out a mess.
Yes.
And there's no way. Well, let me ask you. We're speaking about West Virginia issues. This is a global program, however, and you're dealing with problems that aren't necessarily isolated to West Virginia issues. Is this something that is very bothersome or troublesome to America's teachers?
Yes, it is. No Child Left Behind started out as a good idea, the basic parts of it, accountability and things of that nature. We never had a problem agreeing with that. And we know that West Virginia's teachers aren't afraid to be accountable for turning out quality students and quality children for the 21st century. But when they set up so many roadblocks to making those children come out the way that everybody wants them to come out, it becomes very frustrating for teachers all across the United States as well as West Virginia.
It strikes me, Mr. DeLauder, am I pronouncing your name correctly?
Yes, you are.
Okay. It strikes me that there's some sort of a misguided attempt to turn America's school systems into some sort of thing from Lake Wobegon, where all the men are good looking, all the women are I forget, and all the children are above average. Mathematical laws say that we can't do that.
That's absolutely correct. You know, in No Child Left Behind, you have different cell sizes of students. A cell is what you are graded on per se for each school. And if you have 50 or more students in that cell, then you are graded on that group of students. And special needs children are tested the same as every other child out there, or at least 90% of them are. So if a child who has special needs was the same as the 90% of the other children out there, they wouldn't be special needs.
Well, it kind of goes without saying, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Doesn't the system as it stands sort of present itself with the opportunity for some abuse as well, insofar as attendance rates and things like that are concerned?
Well, attendance is very important in schools, and I think the majority of school systems attempt to do things right and spend the time where it's necessary to spend it. But there's always somebody out there that can take advantage of the system and try to work it to their advantage.
Your member teachers, Mr. DeLauder, where do they come to? Now, see, I say this from the standpoint of my lovely wife and I have three children in the West Virginia public school system.
And they're getting a great education, I'm sure.
We try to partner with the schools, and we've had wonderful, wonderful teachers. But the one sore spot that has come up, not just for us, but for the teachers as well, is the standardized testing.
Yes.
The idea that we're teaching children how to take tests as opposed to how to process information. Is that part of your consideration with regard to the No Child Left Behind stuff?
Yes, it is. A standardized test is good for some students, but a lot of students don't do well on standardized tests. Plus the fact that it is overemphasized not only in West Virginia but across the country. There is too much time spent making sure that we get these children to where they need to be for the test. Teachers have lost the ability to teach just what they enjoy teaching the most. For a good example, it deals with the Thanksgiving time period. A lot of elementary teachers used to do Native American observances during Thanksgiving week.
Sure.
Well, they don't test that. So that has been taken out of the curriculum, and other things have been put in their place so that they are teaching what will be on the test eventually.
And where curriculum is concerned, teachers have, and I come from a long line of teachers to start with. My grandmother Kincaid taught in the Fayette County, West Virginia school system for 60 years.
Oh, my.
So, you know, your profession is near and dear to my heart. But I wonder if teachers are getting their, are having to, teach with one hand tied behind their back, insofar as they are, they're limited in their curriculum by what you just mentioned, what is on the test.
That's absolutely right. You know, we have learning outcomes in West Virginia, and, they have just redesigned all those learning outcomes, and we are starting to move away from having so much emphasis on the test. The State Board of Education has decided that, you know, this may not be the best thing for all of our students. Now, we're only one of three states in the country that's had all their testing approved by the federal government. But we started looking at something called 21st century learning skills, and we need to prepare our children to live in the 21st century. You know, we talk jokingly about the teletype machine.
Mm-hmm.
These kids today wouldn't know a teletype machine if they happened to walk by it.
No.
And most of them would not know a typewriter if they walked by it.
No, not at all.
Because everything they do is geared to computers and the technology that we have to prepare our children for that's 10 years down the road.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. And that leads me to another area. We follow, being liberals and progressives on this program, Mr. DeLauder, we follow the attack that has been made on this culture by what we refer to, and I'm not talking about people's individual faith or anything like that, but by what I call the religion industry. These people who want to who ostensibly claim to be followers of a particular faith, but spend all of their time on politics and things that don't really touch on where we need to be. And lo and behold, I got a press release saying that the NEA was under attack by the American Family Association because of a resolution that you guys wanted to pass that just acknowledged people's rights to be who they are. Is this something that that makes life more difficult for an educator?
Well, the funny thing about that whole situation was that they told their members to email me, and a number of them did email me. And so I thought, well, all right, I want to see what this is all about. So I went to their site and signed up to be a member of the American Family Association.
Mm-hmm.
And because, you know, I'm a man of God, and I believe that there is a higher being and everything. So I signed up for it. And so I sent myself an email, and I responded to it. And lo and behold, when it comes to me, when I sign up for it, they send me a request for a donation.
Sure.
Of 50, 100, 200, and up.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then 2 days later, before I ever left West Virginia to come down here for the meeting where that supposed resolution was going to be approved that they talked about, they sent another email out saying they changed our minds. NEA was not going to do that resolution anymore.
I saw the whole process, Mr. DeLauder. I saw the one come through. Your pressure on the... On the NEA made them change their mind about the godless homosexuals.
But all that happened before we ever had a meeting. So I don't know how in the world you could say you had any effect on anything before the meeting. Now, and you're absolutely right, we did have a resolution talking about how diverse our population is and how people should be guaranteed their rights. And that's exactly what it amounted to. It had nothing to do with whether you're homosexual or bisexual or transgender or anything of that nature. And it was just...
It had a lot to do with being human, didn't it?
That's absolutely right. But well, it was a major fundraiser for them.
Sure. And I wonder, you know, because we talk a lot about these phony, dummied-up, ginned-up issues. And frankly, our kids, my wife is sitting next to me, they are 9, 10, and 12.
Mm-hmm.
And while it is lamentable that on the playground words like queer and faggot and lezzy get thrown around, children are mean to each other from time to time, and it is in the nature of children that they will be so. But I wonder if it presents a problem for educators trying to deal with that in this current very what I perceive to be very hostile culture.
Well, when terms like that are thrown around, it not only hurts the people they're thrown at, but it hurts everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Because nobody is above those things. And any time that you use words like that, you know, a six-year-old will go home and say, "Mom, what's this mean?" or something like that. So not only have you hurt the child that message was thrown at, you've also hurt all the others, because a lot of parents don't deal very well with the first time their child comes home and says a dirty word to them or something of the nature, then,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's just beyond our belief that a six-year-old could say those kind of things.
Well, some of these things children are learning in the home and bringing to school, because I'm pretty sure they're not learning it in third grade language.
You're absolutely right.
Go right ahead, please.
You need a whole standard. The parents have to be involved in education, and I applaud your station for being involved with your children's education. It is one of the key issues that we need to bring home to parents in West Virginia and Kentucky, all over the United States, that teachers want to see you in schools. They want you to be an active part of their child's education. If you're not an active part, then you're depending on the teachers to do everything, and that'll never work.
Well, you can't get an education in 6.5 or 7 hours a day. Education is a lifelong thing, and it has to happen at home. Let me ask you about resource issues, Mr. DeLauder. We're here, like I said, in Fayette County, and we see what we perceive to be a whole lot of robbing Peter to pay Paul going on in terms of school programs and school funding. I'm a firm believer in the arts, in speech, debate, visual arts, all and music. And we know for a fact that those things are taking a hit across the country. Is the NEA taking a position on arts education?
We took two or three positions on arts education. We had two new business items advocating that the NEA get involved in what we call a quality education, which is well-rounded, and that deals with arts. We also took a position on physical education for children.
Oh, good.
And so, you know, we think that a child needs physical education at least 30 minutes a day, K through 12. No more of this time where you go back and you just sit and you don't do anything. Now, whether or not the state will go along with those things or not, that's all up to the State Board of Education. But as far as the arts go, we had requested that boards of education look at maintaining those programs rather than cutting them to add administrators or additional teachers so they can meet the testing needs.
Well, you know, we talk about the value of science and the value of mathematics, and yet it seems that there are those from an administration standpoint who seem not to have gotten the memo, Mr. DeLauder, that in young children, music is one of the primary means of hardwiring the brain for mathematical concept comprehension.
You're absolutely right. You know, when you have a quality music program and quality arts program, then you've got a quality school system. You cannot do one without the other. And I know that Athleta Orr taught in Fayette County School for a number of years before she retired, and I know that those children had a quality music program in the schools that she taught in, because I've been in there and seen it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you could get a lot of parents in there to see the same things, then you could end up with more parents involved, a better knowledge of what goes on in the schools, and less people outside saying, well, what are they doing up there?
Well, let me ask you a weird question that sort of dovetails into that. West Virginia, like most states, has a fairly rigorous standard for bringing educators into the classroom, you know, teacher certification, that kind of thing. And I understand that you don't just want any old dude walking in and trying to teach class. But where in days where we have shrinking budgets and diminished resources for whatever reason, and I've got a pretty solid idea of why I think they are, tax cuts. Where do you stand? You know, you've got a guy who was an engineer for 30 years. He's retiring, and he wants to give something back to his community. Where would you stand on the idea of him volunteering to teach upper-level mathematics in a high school, for instance, that wouldn't have the funding to, say, hire a calculus teacher?
Well, we have no problem with that occurring as long as that person gets the hours he needs and how to teach. You know, there's a difference between knowing a subject and knowing how to impart that subject to other people.
Certainly.
And a lot of the people who are engineers who work in plants, and you know, it's really easy to go in there and turn some valves and say, well, this will make that product. And then you sit back and you check the quality of it every day. But when you have to impart to children that you have to take two parts of this substance and one part of this substance to make that product, and if you don't do it right, it'll blow up on you, then you have a whole different set of expectations and outcomes that you're going to be looking at.
Is there any kind of streamlined process out there? I mean, if we're talking about getting people involved in the public school system and the learning experience, it would seem that bringing in that kind of experience would be beneficial. Is there some way that I mean, you're not going to send an engineer back to get a bachelor's in secondary education, are you?
No. We do have a streamlined process for that. And right now in West Virginia, because of the shortage of teachers we're experiencing, if you have a bachelor's degree, you can take a 12-hour class, 12 hours worth of classes, and, you know, 6 hours in 2 days, and become certified to teach in West Virginia.
Really?
But that does not mean that you're going to be a highly qualified teacher. To be a highly qualified teacher, which is, goes back to No Child Left Behind, you have to have a degree in the subject you are teaching in.
Okay.
So, plus all the education items. And somewhere down the line, I'm assuming that since they put that in the law of No Child Left Behind, you're either going to meet those standards or you're not going to have a job.
Well, that seems to make sense. You mentioned there is a shortage of teachers in West Virginia?
Yes, there is. There are about somewhere in the neighborhood of 450 to 800 math and science and foreign language teachers missing in West Virginia schools. And some of the classes are being taught by teachers who are teaching the class simply because they had that class in high school.
Mercy.
It may be that was 30 years ago, but that's the best the school system can do because they cannot find anyone certified in those fields.
Where do you come down on issues like, and I've seen, we've seen this, our daughter graduated from high school just this past spring. I assume that as the West Virginia Education Association, the National Education Association, you want teachers in classrooms. Where do you come down on this idea of putting 20 kids in a classroom and turning on a TV for a satellite feed?
It depends on what the satellite feed is offering. Sometimes, you know, if you have children in a classroom and you're doing distance learning, that can be very helpful. But there has to be some method or someone available for those children to ask their questions of. If I were trying to teach you mathematics and I was doing it over a satellite feed, and you just couldn't understand how to do a problem.
Right.
There's no way that I would be able to help you do that. You've got to have somebody in that school system that can come to you and you can say, well, I have this problem. I don't know how to do this particular equation. And that person would be able to sit down with you and explain it to you. Now, it may be that you only have one person in the whole school system that can do that, but that person needs to be made available to those children who are taking the distance learning classes.
How about teacher salaries, Mr. DeLauder? This is kind of a softball. Do teachers make what they should be making? West Virginia or anywhere else?
Well, our salaries are not comparable with other folks who have a four-year degree. And West Virginia currently ranks 47th in the nation in average teacher salary.
Now that's average. That's everything from the first year getting started in the kindergarten teacher all the way to the 20-year chemistry teacher in the high school.
That's correct.
And that's 47th?
47th in the nation. And as being ranked at 47th, you know, we're turning out a quality product in West Virginia schools. Our children compete with the best in the world, and their education is second to none. When you graduate from West Virginia schools, you're going to be a well-rounded student. But yet teacher salaries are not comparable to what we're turning out.
And yet at the same time, I think I've read statistics somewhere that say that we're fairly well graded on being kind of in the middle of the pack on per capita student spending. Is that correct?
That's correct. Now,
where's the money going?
When you talk about per capita student spending, you have to remember that included in that number is the $375 million that the state of West Virginia has to put into the teacher retirement program each and every year because they failed to fund it properly.
That's kind of like cheating, isn't it?
Well, it sure is, because you take that $375 million and divide that amongst our 180,000 students, as you can well see, you've already got an appreciable amount of money expended for per student.
Yeah.
But
that's not gonna pay for a jungle gym. It's not gonna pay for a PowerPoint slide. The screen. It's not going to pay for a computer. It's not going to pay for a teacher.
That's absolutely right. It's money that, because of the sins of the past, we have to make that up.
So what? Let me ask you: what does the number look like once you take out that sort of dummied up figure?
It's a lot lower than most of the country.
Well, that being the case, you know, we always hear, you know, well, I read in the Gazette the other day that we've got $174 million surplus that the legislature is going to get to play with soon.
I read that same thing, and I was very impressed, because that is an appreciable amount of money.
You got any wish list for where that ought to go?
I certainly do. I think, number one, it should go to fund teacher salaries. And we've got to bring teacher salaries so that we can recruit young people to become teachers. You know, right now, if you graduate from college and you're a teacher, you're going to make $27,000 a year. And, you know, coming out of college, that looks like a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing you have to do when you come out of college is you have to have a decent car to get to work.
Yep.
You have to have a place to live.
And you've probably got a student loan nut that's going to be a big chunk of that 27K.
You've got a student loan probably in the neighborhood of $50,000, just because that's what it costs to go to college for 4 years. And then you've got to buy food. You've got to pay for it. You almost have to have an entire new wardrobe to begin teaching.
Yeah.
And unless you're living with mom and dad, it's very difficult to do all those things.
And, you know, I know from personal experience that there's a lot of money that comes out of teachers' pockets that goes into classroom activities.
Yes. Teachers spend probably between $500 and $700 a year out of their pockets for materials to enhance instruction for students.
You know, I find this all astonishing, and even if I like to think that even if I did not have children in the system, that I would still feel like it was about one of the best investments any given state could make in its future, its teaching core. How do you get through to state leaders? Because in that same article that we just discussed, Mr. DeLauder, I read a passage where it said that our governor says that he wants to devote that money to tax cuts.
Yeah.
I mean, that made me tear at my hair and run screaming around the room. Same effect on you?
Yes, it does. You know, you've got to maintain the services West Virginia provides. You cannot just cut taxes willy-nilly and come up with the amounts of money that are necessary to help educate our children. Yeah, you know, the key to a good democracy is an educated populace. And I believe Thomas Jefferson said that.
Mm-hmm.
But if we don't keep our children educated and give them the ability to think for themselves, we've really done a disservice to ourselves and to our state and to our country. So when you start talking about tax cuts, you've got to look at what you can do and whether or not those tax cuts are sustainable. You know, we had the food tax taken off one point in time.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, I believe it was 1990, when Gaston Caperton became governor, he looked at everything and said, I don't know why anybody would have taken that food tax off. So we've got to be realistic when we talk about cutting taxes. And we've got to maintain the programs that our citizenry want.
Well, we talked a few moments ago about the impact that these fake religious groups have on policy debate within your organization. Let's go to another, at least what I perceive to be as a nemesis. There's a growing cadre of right wingers out there, Mr. DeLauder, who no longer they're literally trying to change the frame of the debate. They will not any longer refer to the public school system. They try to poison the minds of their listeners and their readers by calling them government schools. Are you familiar with this at all?
Yes, I am. Government schools are nowhere near a correct term for our public education system. You know, what makes our country great is the ability to educate every child. When you talk about these countries such as Japan and Germany and places like that, they educate only the best and the brightest are the ones they send to college. Every child in the United States of America can have the opportunity to go to college if they're willing to work, if they're willing to take that chance of stepping out and saying, I can do this. So I think that's one of the trademark things of our country that makes it great.
And these government schools people, they're the same ones that push things like school vouchers. And it seems to me that inherent in the school voucher argument is the notion or an unstated desire, if you will, to ultimately kill public education in this country. Am I overstating it?
No, sir, you are not. That's exactly what I think our intended purpose of life is to do away with public education.
What happens to an America that has no public education system?
You end up with a class system like we had when we first started our country, before we had like what we left in England, where you have nobles and people of that nature, and you have the poor common man who is down there working for next to nothing, attempting to keep those individuals at the top very happy and very successful.
Well, and dare I say that you move toward a slave society?
Absolutely. You know, in West Virginia right now, the low income and the middle income pay a lot more taxes than the people at the top.
Yeah, they do.
And if you're going to fix the tax structure, you've got to look at making that equitable. You know, if I'm going to pay 10% and I make $12,000 a year, then I ought to pay 10% and if I make $50,000 a year. And if I make $500,000 a year, I ought to pay 10% there, too, and be willing and happy to do that.
Well, that's not how it's working right now.
No, it's not. it doesn't work that way on the federal level. It doesn't work that way on the state level. And I'm hopeful that when the governor's done with his tax proposals, that he will look at that and say, you know, let's make this fair. Let's make this equitable. Let's make a tax system that brings everybody to the same standard and holds them there.
Mr. DeLauder, you have been very generous with your time, and you've been very candid, and I appreciate you answering some what I thought were tough questions. I have one last one for you, and it's probably not one you were expecting, but given the people who listen to this program, for whom this program matters, I know that I would be almost darn nigh tarred and feathered if I did not raise this issue with you. I'm sure you are familiar with Marsh Fork Elementary School.
Yes.
I can't imagine, and I will tell you candidly, that when we had gone down there to visit with some friends, and I drove by, and I showed my children Marsh Fork Elementary School, and they knew that there was 2.5 billion gallons of carcinogenic, toxic goo hanging over the heads of those children and those educators as they went to that school every day, that school was, in fact, full of coal dust, and it's been proven now scientifically. What can parents do? What can the? I mean, these are your members teaching there.
That's absolutely right.
Now there is a program out there that has been started literally at the grassroots level called PenniesOfPromise.org, trying to raise enough money to build a new school in a safe area where those children will not have to have a two-hour bus ride to some other school, that they can still go to a community school and not be threatened with death every day that they go to try to learn. Can the West Virginia Education Association take a position on Marsh Fork Elementary?
We absolutely can, and I believe we've already done that at least once. Marsh Fork Elementary is one of those unique schools in West Virginia that has been bypassed, and everything has been built up around it with all that toxic sludge that you talk about. The state of West Virginia has absolutely dropped a ball in that instance. They need to look at that school and say, you know what, we've got the school building authority. Let's go down there and find a place that is safe, that is healthy, to build a school for these children. And, you know, get the politics out of the school building authority at this point in time and say, let's do what's best for kids. Let's go down to Fayette County and take care of this school problem and make sure that these children are not subjected to breathing coal dust day in and day out.
You've got members who have died from cancer there.
Absolutely.
I don't think it's fair to teachers. I certainly don't think it's fair to children. There's an anhydrous ammonia tank pressurized right next to that school that if it ever leaked, everybody dies.
That's absolutely right.
So
I think that the state has been remiss in not doing what they need to do, and I think the County Board of Education needs to step up and say, we're going to do something to help these children and the employees there. You know, we deal a lot with numerous schools in West Virginia have mold and mildew problems.
Sure.
And people end up with cancer in those buildings, too. And sometimes you end up in a classroom that has to be put right back to the way it was, and you end up in a classroom after being out sick for almost a year, and they put you right back in the same classroom. And we support our members when that happens. We go in and fight for them to get them moved to a safer place, a place that has adequate ventilation. And the same thing would happen at Marsh Fork.
Can you see Marsh Fork coming up a little bit on your radar? I mean, or getting more attention from the WVEA?
Absolutely.
Well, I know that there are people listening who just got a ray of hope because they've been fighting for their children. It was announced on this program a couple of weeks ago. One man in the name of his granddaughter is going to walk from Charleston, West Virginia, to Washington, D.C. to publicize the plight of this school. I would sincerely hope that upon being contacted that the WVEA might be able to voice some solidarity with him.
We certainly could.
Mr. DeLauder, thank you very kindly. It has been a pleasure making your acquaintance. If you ever have information you want to get out there, or for that matter, please let others know in the NEA.
Okay.
Because, like I said, this is a global program. You're talking to the entire world right now.
Oh, good.
Please let us know, because we are friends of working people. Teachers are working people, and we are by more than anything else, we are friends of our children and friends of our children's future. And I consider you to be in the same camp with me.
Well, I thank you for that, and I appreciate the time you've given me today to express our views on such things as No Child Left Behind. I believe that we've got to make a difference for our children.
And I think the time is drawing nigh when we don't have much choice.
Absolutely right.
Mr. DeLauder, the best to you, and I wish you very well as the meeting concludes.
Thank you.
Take care.
All right.
Bye now. Charlie DeLauder, president of the West Virginia Education Association, delegate to the National Education Association meeting. I believe it wraps up tomorrow. I have, I wasn't blowing smoke at him. My grandmother did teach in the Fayette County, West Virginia school system for 60 years. At one point was voted the best one-room school teacher in West Virginia. I don't know, one-room school teacher. I think at that point you get like an S on, a red cape and an S on your chest or something. She put her entire family through college teaching. An amazing, amazing human being. I still meet people who said, I went to school to your grandma. Her sisters became teachers as a result of what she did. One of her daughters became a teacher as a result of what she did. My sister is a teacher because of what she did, because it mattered. The family legend has it that she went to school the first day, and she came home and looked at her father, and she said, "Poppy, I know what I want to do when I grow up." We're talking about a six-year-old girl in 1900. And he said, "What's that, baby?" And she said, "I want to be a teacher." And she held on to that dream. And, frankly, she was paid bupkis. We ask, and there are two teachers' labor organizations in this country. There's in this country and in this state, the WVEA and the NEA, and there's also the American Federation of Teachers. I have a great deal of respect for both organizations. And I know, our property taxes go to support the education system. And yet, as Mr. DeLauder noted, we get these numbers of, West Virginia is 17th in the country in per capita student spending. But that includes fraudulent numbers. Of course, anymore these days, it seems that, in the days of Bush America, it seems like any time you see a number, it's going to be ginned up. It's going to be dummied up. It's going to be phony and fake. And in this case, it's phony and fake, too. We have money to give everybody in the world a raise except a teacher. The one group that probably needs it most, deserves it most, and I'm talking about state employees. And I'm proud to hear him say that they can take a stand on Marsh Fork Elementary. Let's take a break. When we come back, your phone calls, if you feel so inclined, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, Head On. Email comes to Bob at headonradio.com. Learn it, know it, use it. I'm Bob. This is the Head On Radio Network.
the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
Ben, where are we?
What, are you born yesterday? We're at the doctor's office.
I'm sick? Already? Oh, break it to me, Ben. What have I got?
Kid, relax. We're here for our second newborn screening.
A newborn screening? What's that?
You see, we got tested for these rare diseases when we are first born. But sometimes they don't show up till we're older. So you got to get the second test between 7 and 14 days.
Diseases? I feel sick. Oh, I better got something in the nursery. Remember that kid who screamed all the time?
Breathe, baby. This test is for treatable stuff. If anything is wrong, now's the time to find out.
I heard even healthy-looking kids can have something deadly, Ben.
That's why every baby's got to go back for his second screening.
So, with the second heel stick, you think my chances are good?
Heel stick? What heel stick? Nobody told me nothing about a heel stick.
Oh, brother.
For information on this newborn screening program, call the Tech Department of Health.
One way employers honor their most cherished workers is by allowing them the pleasure of meeting a quota. Because management is so smart and in touch, the quota is always a realistic goal that can be easily met. Selling 80 sets of encyclopedias this week? No problem. The worker loves his quota because he knows it's merely a target and not a big axe constantly looming over his head that'll determine if he's still employed or living in a cardboard box next month. When you exceed your quota, you're sure to be given a huge bonus. Your boss would not just use this as an excuse to raise your quota in a devilish game of how much work can we pile on Sheldon before he starts babbling and stains his chair again. Yes, the rewards are great and easily obtainable for meeting your quota.
Thing. 12 minutes before the hour, and our good friend Luke from Knoxville, Tennessee, has been holding and holding and holding, and we appreciate his patience. Hey, Luke, welcome to the program.
That's no problem, Bob. One thing I can add on to your guest was my sister-in-law, about a dozen years ago, she was a teacher in beautiful San Antonio.
Mm-hmm.
Under the Bush regime.
That would be Rod Page?
Oh, yes. Well, he was over in Houston, but he was already running it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
And like I say, the problem was you taught the test. You didn't teach school. You taught the test. Because if you didn't teach the test and the test scores went down, you lost your money. I mean, essentially, it was sort of...
Well, you know, you lost your money, you lose your job.
Uh-huh.
And yet, on the other... We had a very good teacher at the middle school a few years back, Luke... And she patiently explained to me the sort of Damocles that hangs over a teacher's head. She was really dedicated to what she did, and she had great success at raising test scores from fourth grade to fifth. And she got called on the carpet and accused of dummying up the test results because there was such a dramatic increase in the scores.
It's just ridiculous. But let's go on to something else, just to change the subject.
Okay, please.
Did you get to see Meet the Press this weekend?
I must confess I did not. I was on the road most of the weekend.
Okay. If you get a chance, might well go over to Crooks and Liars. They had their little round table, and two people sitting side by side were Dana Priest of the Washington Post and Bill Bennett. Mr. Morality. Well, Mr. Morality started into one of his long-winded conversations, and she cut him off at the kneecaps. And it was funny just to look at, just turn the sound off and just look at the look on his face. But she got into it. I mean, oh, she just cut his kneecaps down. It was just funny. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because he was getting ready for one of his 10-minute tirades, and she just cut him off at the
Oh, you mean one of those do-as-I-say-and-not-as-I-do tirades?
Yeah. Things.
Listen, America, don't sit naked in front of a one-armed bandit eating Cheetos and feeding nickels. Yeah, that one.
Yeah. Oh, you saw the thing about the OxyContin kids got off today.
Yeah, I was going to kind of leave that alone because it was just too depressing. I wonder about what about the two doctors that dummied up the script?
The fun part is they're the ones that probably end up getting fined.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, though. I heard that Rush got off. I didn't hear anything about the docs.
Well, supposedly what one of them did is sort of like, you aren't supposed to do it that way. Because you have to file, if you put it in like the doctor's name, you have to file paperwork and all this other stuff. And apparently he didn't do it, so.
No.
Congratulations. So, isn't life fun?
Yeah, it is. And I just, but, you know, it's worth remembering if this had been some.
Oh, anybody else.
Yeah, some poor dude with one tooth, yeah, he'd be in prison by now.
Oh. God, I mean, like I say, you wouldn't even be allowed probably to talk to your lawyer. It's like, no, you don't need one. This is already over. You know what I mean? You broke an agreement with the district attorney. Say bye-bye. You know, we're not even going to worry about the trial. The judge is going to come in and just give you a number. 10. Go away for 10. You know, it's like a dart.
I've got my Ouija board ready.
I've got the thing. Let me throw it over at it. Okay, you're going away for 7 years.
Magic 8-ball. How many years will Flush go away for? Oh, answer answer hazy. Ask again later. Okay.
Like I say, I saw Miss Rhodes was back today on Air America, and she had a whole lot of fun with this.
No, I imagine she did. I'm just, you know, I'm just disgusted with it. I'm disgusted with him.
I know.
And I almost feel like he's not worth wasting an effort on. I'm not being critical, mind you, but
I agree. It's like I was sitting here. I've got Oberman on with the sound off, and they were sitting there doing on the blonde stick figure. And it's like I'm to the point now. I don't care. I mean, you know, I don't even want to hear about her. I feel good, bad, or ugly.
Well, except for the part where she openly violates federal law by advocating the bombing of the New York Times building. You know, I mean, she got a chance to recant from that. Oh no, I still wish they'd bomb the New York Times.
The one they're on to her now is apparently it's either the one about her voter fraud or the one about her plagiarizing. So I can still enjoy just looking at the headline on that. I don't want to know the story yet, but you know.
Yeah, I know. But can you imagine if I came out and said, "Yeah, the only problem with Tim McVeigh is that he didn't blow up Focus on the Family headquarters in Colorado Springs, Colorado."
I mean, if you said that for real, I figure within about 10 minutes, I figured you'd hear the black helicopter overhead.
No, yeah, Agent Fred, you know, the dude with the glasses looks just like the guy in the Matrix. Be right there at the door to the studio, and it'd all be over.
Mr. Kincaid, come with us. You know.
Well, where are we going? You don't need to know.
Well, did you get the email I sent you about the Greenbrier?
Yes, I did. I did, and as a matter of fact, I was just answering a couple of questions about it in chat. I have fired off. A couple of emails to the only people I know that could possibly make it happen, and I'm trying to arrange an interview. It may not happen, but it only seems fair. America's other
process. You know what I mean? It was just dumb luck.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of those things. I went to every site, some sites about him, and I couldn't find anything telling him he was still going to that. And I just happened to hit that on that news site, and I was like, okay.
And I'm sure there will be a bunch of right wing weirdos down there.
So, you know, but
I appreciate the heads up.
Like I say, that was well. You saw who was going to appear? I think is it Friday? Jessica Lynch.
Yeah, Jessica Lynch is going to be there. She's 1 year into her college career, studying to be a teacher.
And I also saw the Greenbrier is reopening their tours. I believe the middle of the month.
Yeah, yeah. On the public
tour.
You go down there for one of the public days, and it is an amazing place. And
I've seen
you can
thing on the Discovery Channel on it, and what they showed was just whoa.
It's all that.
I'm sure in person it's even better. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, it's for my taste, it's a little over the top in the old style resort kind of way. I'm not that impressed with great big white columns and stuff, but my God, the food, Luke, the food.
I'm sorry. The only problem I have with the Greenbrier is every time I look at it, for some reason my mind just goes, The Shining.
Well, yeah, there's that element of it, too. You know, that somewhere in some corner, in some wing, there's some... work and no play makes Jack a dull boy. But really, the shops down, the really high-end, you can't afford to shop there kind of shops that, I mean, at least I can't. I walked into Polo Ralph Lauren down there, and, like, Ralph hangs out there from time to time. There was a 100% cashmere jacket. And see, I can't be this kind of consumer anymore, Luke. There was a cashmere jacket in there that was $3,000. And it was right there in a 46 long. I mean, it fit me, okay? But I put it on, and instead of going, ooh, wow, I tried it on, and I was like, who in their right mind would do this?
It's like, I could go get an ice
cream. I can buy a herd of goats and get the cashmere myself for the money it takes to buy this coat.
I know. It's sometimes some of the excesses we live to, you're sound like going, let me step back about three steps and look at this and go, what the heck am I doing?
Yeah, but you know what a foodie I am. I went two doors down and one door over into their little kitchen shop where they... And they, you know, they give away food in there, you know, for the plebeians like me.
But you know, it's that little bit of, you know, in all of us that like to look at the Sharper Image catalog.
Sure.
You know, it's one of those things.
But you know, yeah,
you have to dream a little.
And you know, they do things there like farm fresh strawberries, cored and filled with sweetened mascarpone cheese, bathed in a sweetened balsamic vinaigrette. You know, stuff that you'd never think. Oh my God! You know, they were giving that away the day I was there, and I just, you know, just stood there and lost my mind.
It's usually the stuff that, like, that's my one good meal of the year. You know, that special meal you have.
Well, yeah, and so the thing is, that when they open it up for public visitation or whatever it is they call it, you know, you can come in there and then spend a day. You know, you can spend the night. You know, just ordinary people.
Oh.
The plebs. We can go to the Greenbrier and spend the night and have brunch on Sunday. And to go to the Greenbrier brunch is to find out how the other half lives. You know, liveried waiters and, yes, sir, yes, ma'am. And they get out the little bread scraper and they scrape your crumbs before they put the next plate down. And, oh! And it challenges you because it challenges my sensibilities, at least, Luke, because it makes me think... Yeah, well, you know, I feel I get in touch with Jesus up on top of the mountaintop, and, you know, all this can be yours, and all I got to do is kind of open the microphone and start screaming about free market economics, and next thing you know, me and Agnes, we're weekending at the Greenbrier.
Oh, speaking on that, I listened to Mr. Hartman today.
Yes.
And he had on, not Mr. Bortz, but whoever Mr. Bortz's partner is on the fair tax thing.
Oh, yeah.
And just laid him out. Oh, he just went up one side of him and down the other with a mower.
Well, I may have to go and check. That was today?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to go check me out some archives.
That was good. I mean, he just went up one side and down the other, and it's like, what do you mean it's just being passed on to us? You know?
But that's their only... Well, you know, you're paying it anyway.
Yeah.
Well, see, I'm not feeling it right now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and Hartman went into it, you know, about why that's not what the way it really is. So it was fun having him just cut that up.
Well, Tom is very good at that. Tom can do those numbers things and make sense of them. It is beyond me to even try.
You know, he's out on the West Coast. I just wish one time that Barr would have him down and let him sit on the panel.
Oh, wouldn't it be wonderful?
Oh, he would cut some of them people up to little pieces.
Yeah, and Tom is not without his witticisms either.
Oh.
Yeah, it would be enjoyable. Hey, Luke, we're fresh out of time. We're up at the top.
All righty, then. Y'all have a good
one. All right, take care. Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye now. And when we come back, I've still got a stack of stuff. And we barely even mentioned poor Kenny Boy. And oddly enough, there is some part of it, it goes to show what an enlightened human being I am. No, there's some part of me that feels some level of sadness for his family. It don't last long, but I do. If you want to get involved with the program, you know how. 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. Email comes to bob@headonradio.com. Learn it, know it, use it. This is the Head On Radio Network. And, oddly enough, I'm Bob.
The country has so far launched 7 missiles. At a United Nations Security Council meeting today, Japan prepared a resolution demanding that sanctions be imposed against North Korea. That resolution was backed by the U.S. and Britain, but opposed by Russia and China, who say that will make the situation worse. North Korea has previously said that any sanctions imposed against it will result in war. In the Gaza Strip, a Hamas militant and a policeman were killed today when Israeli troops advanced into the northern part of Gaza City. Meanwhile, Palestinian militants fired more rockets into southern Israel. No casualties were reported. In Mexico, officials are recounting the votes cast in Sunday's presidential election. Officials say the final results are impossible to predict, but the latest results show the leftist candidate with a slight lead. In Brussels, today's scheduled talks between Iran and the European Union were unexpectedly rescheduled for tomorrow. During that meeting, leaders will discuss the incentives package that world powers hope will convince Iran to halt its nuclear program. In Washington, a congressional panel says Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld has until July 14th to hand over documents related to the abuse probe at Abu Ghraib prison. That demand comes after he failed to respond to a previous request. The panel is seeking information on a soldier who says he suffered retaliation after reporting the abuse. North Korea's Kim Jong-il and Venezuela's Hugo Chavez are scheduled to meet in Venezuela later this month. They're expected to craft an oil-for-arms deal to form an alliance against the U.S. Chavez is also reportedly trying to establish ties with Cuba, Iran, and some African countries. In Alexandria, Virginia today, President Bush spoke at a Dunkin' Donuts shop to promote his immigration reform bill. Meanwhile, Senate and House Republicans began holding public hearings in Philadelphia and San Diego. In Houston, NASA officials say there's no indication the space shuttle Discovery was damaged during yesterday's liftoff from Cape Canaveral. It's scheduled to meet up with the International Space Station tomorrow. In Aspen, Colorado, former Enron head Kenneth Lay died today of a heart attack. The 64-year-old was convicted of fraud and was set to be sentenced in October. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
New Jersey could be losing up to $20 million a day. That's because the state budget crisis has prompted the closure of a dozen Atlantic City casinos. Three people face charges of stealing trade secrets from Coca-Cola and trying to sell them to Pepsi. One of those worked for Coca-Cola as an administrative assistant. All three will appear in court tomorrow. Mexican broadcaster Televisa may sell its stake in Univision to a private equity group that would allow the company to expand within the U.S. Hispanic market. A new study shows liver abnormalities in 40% of those who took the maximum doses of Tylenol for 2 weeks. That raises concerns about liver damage in those who take the recommended amounts of the painkiller. Factory orders for manufactured goods rose 0.7% in May, following an April decline. The Commerce Department says more demand for petroleum and chemicals made up for a drop in orders for commercial aircraft and automobiles. Southwest Airlines has raised its fares for the fourth time this year. Many one-way trips are now an extra $3 to $10. Oil briefly reached a record high of $75.40 a barrel in trading today. Light sweet crude settled at $75.19. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow was down 76 points at 11,152. NASDAQ down 37 at 2153. S&P 500 down 9 at 1271. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White. It's now 5 minutes past the hour.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Coming up on 6 minutes after the hour, I'm Bob. This is Head On, the Head On Radio Network. This is America's other liberal network. Really and for true. Now, in the course of our discussion with Charlie DeLauder, you know, he mentioned a little bit about the American Family Association. I'm sure maybe it didn't make him real comfortable about it, but you know, I don't try to make people uncomfortable, but what I want people to understand is that this is a free place to and a friendly place in which to object to having our nation stolen from us by a bunch of fake religious idiots and hate mongers, which is all the American Family Association is. God, they started out somewhere in Mississippi, I think. They may still be there. But it wasn't too awful far from where I grew up in Alabama. And I've been reading about the Reverend Donald Wildman for a long time before he achieved national prominence. And I wanted to share with you what it was that I was talking to Mr. DeLauder about, lest there be any question. This is because I am, in fact, signed up for AFA Action Alerts. AFA.net, by the way. Subject: National Education Association set to endorse homosexual marriage. Dear Bob, the National Education Association is set to endorse homosexual marriage at their convention coming up in Orlando June 29th through July 6th. The new NEA proposal essentially says, you know, when they use word, you know, when an ignorant, mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking freak like Wildman or one of his minions uses a phrase like essentially, that means they're lying. The new NEA proposal essentially says schools should support and actively promote homosexual marriage and other forms of marriage, two men and one woman, three women, two women, three men and a baby, four men and a dog, what have you, in their local schools. The new proposal, expected to pass overwhelmingly, is found under the B8 diversity paragraph. The association, they found their bold key for this one, friends and neighbors, believes in the importance of observances, programs, and curricula that accurately portray and recognize the roles, contributions, cultures, and history of these diverse groups and individuals. The association believes that legal rights and responsibilities with regard to medical decisions, taxes, inheritance, adoption, legal immigration, domestic partnerships, found the bold key again, and civil unions and or marriage belong to all these diverse groups and individuals. Well, they kept the bold key on, all right. Translated, that means we're lying again. Translated, that means the NEA will promote homosexual marriage in every avenue they have available, including textbooks, to all children at all age levels and without the permission or knowledge of parents. Their plans will include every public school in America. Let's see if there's any more to that. Yeah, yeah. First, please forward this to all parents with children in the public schools. They need to be aware of the plans the NEA has to indoctrinate their children with their pro-homosexual marriage agenda. All right. So a couple of days later, this doesn't show up on the, it doesn't show up on the agenda for the NEA meeting. I get one saying, we stop the homosexual agenda of the Homosexual Loving National Education Association. You did it. You scared them. You good godly followers of Jesus H. Christ, you scared them into adopting, into, because they was going to adopt the homosexual agenda in broad daylight for everybody to see their homosexualismness. Jiminy. I mean. So, you know, it's time to have some fun with these people. And there are a lot more web-savvy folks than I am out there. I don't want anybody to hack their site or do anything mean to them. But have some fun, because I've found that I can have some fun. If you go to AFA.net, and I wouldn't use an email address that I had any other use for, because you know these sleaze bucket bastards will sell their email list to anybody with a quarter coming. Yeah, hell, Donald Wildman would sell his email list to the North American Man Boy Love Association if there was enough money involved. Okay. So, but, you know, go get yourself a Yahoo address, or, you know, Juno, or, you know, whoever's out there. Is Alta Vista still alive? I don't know. You know, Blue Dog, Green Necktie, you know, whatever, you know. But get yourself a throwaway email address and go and sign up for AFA. Sign up for AFA Action Alerts. And you'll start getting them. Now, you got to check them, because we're actually doing something. We're really good. This is fun. Because they invite you. You know, they assume that if you're on their action alert list, then by God, you must be just like them. Every bit is stupid. Every bit is hateful. Every bit is bigoted. Every bit is filthy. Every bit is as dedicated to doing anything that you possibly can to avoid living, for those who call it, a Christ-like life, because they don't. So you get yourself a Yahoo email address or whatever that you don't have any real use for, and you sign up for your AFA action alerts. And what you'll find is, when you get them, there's a link you can click to, please send a letter today. Please send a letter today to your congressman and senators and President George Bush, telling him that you don't approve of homosexuals building automobiles for General Motors or some such garbage as that, okay? And what you do is you use their... I mean, here, let me see if I can find it real quick. I'll show you exactly what I did. I think this had to do with crosses in San Diego, I believe. I mean, there is an abundance of fun to be out there, had out there with the American Family Association. So I sent one, because you put in your zip code, you fill in your information, and they send an address based on your zip code to whoever they think your congressman and senator and trash collector and president are. So crosses. Thank you for using American Family Association mail system. Message sent to the following recipients, because I typed in 10012 because I heard it on some PSA somewhere, you know, the Save the Nostrils Foundation or something, New York, 10012.
So I sent they sent the following message to Chuck Schumer, Hillary Clinton, and George Bush. Bob Kincaid, 1224 West 54th Street, New York, New York, 10012. Hell, I don't know. Dated July 4th, 2006, and then brackets, recipient address was inserted here. Dear, recipient name was inserted here. And then my text, which was, this is a request that you ignore anything coming from the pathetic, religiously insane, mouth-breathing knuckle-walkers at the American Family Association. These weird little Babylonians won't rest until they have a theocratic state in which freedom of religion is a mandate for forced conversions and persecutions. Please ignore these hate-mongers and stand up to them at every opportunity. Sincerely, Bob Kincaid. Is it going to get read? I don't know. I doubt it. But the fact that we are using their vehicle, you know, me and that mouse in my pocket, using their vehicle to deliver mail condemning them, it just fills me. There's not a lot of stuff you can do for free that's fun in this country anymore, and that just fills me with delight. Let's go to the phones. Peter is with us. Hey, Peter, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. The way I'm hearing it, we're not supposed to preach and we're not supposed to teach. Now we're not supposed to build GM automobiles.
Sorry, no GM automobiles for you.
Well, my God, what do they think we're going to get lipstick in the power steering fluid? What the hell is that?
You know what Ford stands for, fags on road daily. I mean, you know.
Yeah, I was going to tell you that this whole thing keyed something in my mind. I may have mentioned this. It's been quite some time ago, if I had. And this thing about churches breaking up when they endorse homosexual marriages and you know, there are these huge splits in the church. Well, you know, I say let them split. That's what the Baptists did. Baptists did it over slavery. You know, there was an article over about this particular subject regarding the Church of Christ. I don't have that article in front of me, but I can give you the approximate numbers. In any case, after the United Church of Christ officially said, fine, yes, gay marriage here. They, within a period of, I think, about 6 months, lost 37 churches, split away and went independent or joined other congregations or whatever. But during the course of the year, if you look at the whole year...
They grew.
They gained almost 70 churches. And they're still getting serious inquiries about joining. So... You know, when you do the right thing, when you respect people, your church will grow. When you begin walking the walk and talking the talk and acting toward your fellow man as Christ would act toward your fellow man, you grow. When you get rid of this hypocritical hatred.
The bigotry.
Right. There's going to be some dead wood. It's going to fall off. Yes, the churches will split.
You said wood.
Let the screen door hit you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So tired of this mess. It's really getting old.
I got bad news for you, Peter.
What?
I know you're a Methodist.
Well, yes, I am a Methodist. I grew up in the Methodist Church. That's true. We're always having this huge issue every conference.
Stay out of Louisiana.
Why? Is that where their conference is coming up this year?
Well, no. I mean, yeah, there's Louisiana, hammered by Katrina. God knows there is enough work for the children of Christ to do in Louisiana to last till he gets around to coming back.
Don't tell me the homosexuals are not supposed to work in Louisiana.
I'm going to read to you, Peter, because the Methodist in Louisiana done got baptisticated.
What possible harm could we do in Louisiana? Hell, God's already stricken it down because, what's...
Yeah, but you never know when one of them drag queens is going to come off of Bourbon Street and want to get sprinkled.
Honey, they got some scary drag queens down here.
So, Louisiana United Methodists have rejected a proposal that would have required members of the church to renounce racism... Wait for it. Adultery and both heterosexual and homosexual sex outside marriage.
Uh-huh.
The petition submitted by New Orleans pastor Dr. Woody Hingle, I said Woody, I'm sorry, would have affirmed that local church membership in the United Methodist Church, this is a quote, is open to all persons and requires repentance of sin, which includes racism, heterosexual sexual relations outside the marriage bond, and the practice of homosexuality. The measure was overwhelmingly rejected by delegates from the Louisiana UMC Annual Conference.
I see.
So
that pretty much contradicts the church's book of discipline. You know, there is a whole section in it about being open to people who are different and ongoing.
Not that different.
Gay community, blah, blah, blah. But the Methodist Church is so damn schizophrenic. You can walk in one and you couldn't tell it from an Assembly of God, Reverend Phelps.
We got one of those right here.
And you walk into others, and this is especially true on the West Coast, and they're just as liberal and as open and as you could ever want to find. It's the Methodist Church has a huge schism. I tell you, the next conference is going to be fun.
John Wesley would be shocked. Shocked, I tell you.
Oh, yeah. Poor John. He's probably rolling over in his grave.
But I love the way this thing was set out, Peter, because I can't get a sense of what the intent of this was. Because on the one hand, would the Baptists, the Southern Baptists, for the love of God, would they have trouble with a resolution that merely said anyone who wants to be a member of the church needs to renounce racism?
No, not anymore. There'd be a time they would, but they wouldn't dare.
Oh, I think you'd still have debate in the Baptist church.
Yeah, they would probably say depends on what you mean by racism.
So this guy, this Dr. Woody Hingle, he defines sin particularly as racism, adultery, and, you know, far be it from, you know, it's such a childish thing. I don't know why they call it adultery.
Bob, that's such a lie. The definition of sin is anything that separates us from God. Okay?
Yeah.
That's a personal issue. I am sorry, but these people can kiss my pink bottom. It's a personal issue. What separates me from God is entirely different from what would separate you from God. I mean, we have some common denominators there, but in terms of our the way we're wired internally and sexual orientation, and, you know, this is just goes back to tying kids' left hands behind them when they were left-handed. It's absolute BS.
It's cruel and it's mean. But see, I think the reason, I understand, I can sort of get in the mindset, Peter, I understand how bigotry works.
Well.
Because I grew up amongst so much of it. What it is, it called on people to renounce both heterosexual and homosexual sex outside marriage.
Oh, well, yeah, but you know.
You see that? Because that,
I see the catch. Yeah,
that presupposes that, sure. That homosexual sex could happen inside marriage.
Of course. Of course, there's a catch-22, and I don't always, you know, actually respond to it right away, even though I heard it when you said it, because I'm so used to it. I mean, I've heard it all my life. It's like, yeah, yeah, ho-hum. You know, it's always...
You said ho.
Did I say ho on public radio? Oh, my God.
I'm just playing. Don't.
You know, it just gets old, dude, gets old. You sure know how to ring my bell. Boy, I tell you, you hop off on some of these Church of God, holy, and I just go,
oh, Jesus.
I disconnect that modem faster than the lightning bolt. I'm on the damn phone.
Well, you know, it's really neat because our head-on radio network, News Ninja.
Yes. Oh, he is good.
Isn't he good?
I honestly don't know if it's a he or she. I think it might be a he, but I don't know it. I really, you know, I'm not going to ask. It's just irrelevant, but damn, that person's good.
Well, I got a link to a popular mechanics story that the News Ninja sent me personally, knowing that it was prayer meeting night.
Yeah.
This is a story from December 2002 entitled The Real Face of Jesus.
Oh, my God.
And it has to do with this forensic anthropological project that took real skulls of real males from turn of the era, you know, B.C. to A.D., Palestine.
Yeah.
More or less averagely representative.
Yeah.
And they did the whole, you remember the episodes on Quincy when the forensic anthropologist would have the skull and the little pieces of eraser for the thickness of the skin, and they'd spread the clay and build the face, and the next thing you knew what the murder victim looked like?
Yeah, I remember those, sure.
They did that with this.
This is very interesting.
And I'm sitting here looking at a forensic anthropologist's impression of what Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian carpenter, actually looked like.
Boy, I tell you, that News Ninja is something else, and I'm thoroughly convinced that News Ninja is on one of the other internets, because I never see this stuff. Where he is?
Oh, he's on Ted Stevens' secret internet, the one that keeps holding up his other... I had an internet last week.
Well, he's got a back door to the other internet, and I want to know how to get there.
You said back door.
Yeah, the new head on... Newslink there, it's on the Head On Radio main page, is really something, and he's in chat, or she's in chat. Our frozen soul is our News Ninja. I don't mind. I'll just tell you, I don't care who knows it. I'll tell you that he is just incredible. It's amazing the stuff that person says.
Well,
and
this
by
is.
By the way, I have to know what gender. He can't keep going he, she the rest of my life. When I get back in the chat, I demand to know.
Well, if the News Ninja has this link, I think it would be well to post this in chat, because this is just a stirring little. Can you imagine? Can you imagine Yeshua? They posit the average height of a man, full grown. In year one, Palestine, 5'1" tall, 110 pounds.
You're kidding me! I had no idea.
This is, you know, this is that's what malnutrition will do for you.
Now that's amazing.
And you know this portrayal is a far cry from the blonde-haired, blue-eyed representation of the transposed representation of. Apollo.
Oh yeah, and it's also a far cry from the AK-47 toting left behind Jesus.
Cover me, I'm going in.
Yeah, going in.
Salvation is yours. Die.
We with the Rambo belts and everything. Ammo falling.
Veins in my teeth. Heap dead, burnt bodies. Yeah.
When will they ever learn, Bob?
No, they won't. They won't. That's why they are doomed to the lake of everlasting fire. That's they're following Antichrist. How hard can if you were a member of a megachurch or the Southern Baptist Church for that matter, and you looked up and you realized that you were a member of it, and there's millions of members, and you're all going in the same direction, and then somebody shows you that little passage that says, "Broad is the path."
Bob? It seems like that alone would be kind of a maybe this isn't the right thing.
Because, you know, the Satanists are wandering a little deer trail, you know, all the other Wiccans. No, the Southern Baptists have a freaking superhighway into hell.
Yes, they do. And they're riding double-decker buses, and they're piling the back of pickup trucks. And the rich ones are driving.
Pass me the communion grape juice, Eustace.
Yeah, they think they you carry an old bottle of grape juice in the car. They call it one for the road. It's a bit much.
But no, I mean these monsters. You know, but you know, you're you understand the internets too, Peter.
Well, I understand one of them. it's the other ones that worry the hell out of me.
I think we could have a lot of fun with the American Family Association if we got enough people emailing.
Yeah.
Because they invite you to. I mean, just give them that little Yahoo address.
In fact, I recommend that for everybody. Set up a Yahoo address for all that stuff. It's disposable.
And you know, they'll send you their action alerts. You can respond. You every action alert. I've been doing it lately. Every AFA action alert that comes along, I fill in the zip code. I put in all the information, and I send a note saying, you know, I'm sure that you're getting about, you know, a Google of these freaks. Please don't take down the cross in San Diego. You know, please don't let the homosexuals work for GM.
I still can't wrap my head around that.
Well, that's what they're saying. You know, they're saying, it's not GM. I misspoke. It's Ford.
Oh, it's Ford. Well, I thought we weren't supposed to buy Fords. Now we can't work for them either.
Well, I mean, that's what they're getting at. I mean, they're trying to drive. They send action alerts saying we're having an impact on the Ford Motor Company because they advertise in the homosexual magazines, and their sales are down this quarter. Keep not buying Fords, Christians. We'll have them on their knees.
Well, yeah, the ads are right next to the national banks and MasterCard and Visa and all the other.
They're after them too.
Yeah, well, geez. Oh, Lord help us. Yep.
Yeah, last I checked, the money changers don't give a damn, Peter.
No, money changers don't give a damn. It's a shame. Well, anyway, that's all I know.
Well, I appreciate it.
Old, and I wander off subject very easily. You probably have to get a new guest because you know I can't come.
No, that's okay. I apologize for the Ford acronym. That was very crass and crude of me.
I'm not worried about it. But I would like to see that the link that you mentioned earlier. I hope he posts that back in chat.
I do, too.
Okay.
You take care, Peter.
You too. Bye.
Thank you. Let's see. Let's roll. Hey, our good friend Joe Vecchio's with us. Hey, Joe, welcome to the show.
Hey, Bob, how are you?
I'm doing good. Where are you?
Well, I'm still here in Atlanta. I don't leave until Friday.
Okay, just checking.
So I got a nice long bus trip ahead of me that I'm not looking forward to.
Okay, just do me a favor. No Midnight Cowboy soundtrack on the CD player, okay?
No, I actually don't have a portable CD player, so there's no worries there.
No humming it.
No humming it. Okay. Oh, I see what you're saying. No, I'm not going to do a Ratso Rizzo either.
Yeah, no. No.
I'm not going to take a rest stop that wasn't scheduled.
Right.
No, I've been sitting here just doing some computer work that I've been wanting to get done, but just haven't had a chance to, and I'm watching the Braves clobber the Cardinals.
Well, there's a rarity.
Yeah, I know, the way they've been playing this year, and the Cardinals haven't been playing too much.
What are they, 14 and a half back? That was the last time I looked.
It's incredible.
I'm thinking the streak ends this year, Joe.
You had, they're not going to win the division. I mean, that's a given. The Mets are playing too well, and, you know, if it can't be the Braves, I'm glad it's the Mets, because the Mets are the team I used to root for.
Well, I can live with that. I'm holding out. If the Reds could find a bullpen, they're playing good ball.
Mm-hmm.
They're losing a bunch of the I mean, they had a comeback. They went a run up on the Brewers the other night and lost it. You know, bad closers. They desperately need a bullpen.
Well, the Braves used to the same way, but they're getting a little better now lately. They've gotten a little bit more settled in their roles. And you know, it really, except for John Smoltz, they've never really had a great closer during this entire run, except for those 3 years where Smoltz was working for him.
Yeah.
That way, so.
Well, I go all the way back to the World Series and my Yankees fan buddy and I watching the game together, and they'd say, and now Mike Stanton's coming out of the bullpen, and I just look and hand him the $5 bill for the night's bet, and go, that's over now.
Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly what happened. I remember that, because they went in such a blaze of glory. I remember that year because it was the year they were playing the Cardinals in the playoffs, and the Cardinals went up 3-1. And when the Cardinals won the third game, Dennis Eckersley, who was pitching for the Cardinals back then, taunted the Braves' dugout. And the Braves proceeded to win the next 3 games from Chicago, from St. Louis, by a total of something like 32-3 or something like that. Just
a shameless ass whipping.
Oh, and I was laughing when the Braves were up like, you know, 12 runs in the eighth inning. I was laughing at the Cardinals saying, hey, bring in Eckersley. You know? So, and then they won the first 2 games at Yankee Stadium, and you think, oh, man, they got it made. You know, Andrew Jones hits 2 homers.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, man, they got it made. And then just boom.
Yeah, but see, I kept looking at my buddy Larry going, dude, Mike Stanton is still in the bullpen. This guy can lose ball games in ways that you cannot conceive. And sure enough, you know, just he walked in. I handed the $5 bill to Larry, and he never had to hand it back.
Yeah. Oh man. Well, I really didn't want to talk too much about baseball.
I understand.
The game. It was the 4th of July yesterday, and they were supposed to have a fireworks show, which I think they did after, but the game was delayed. It didn't get finished till like 12 o'clock.
Yeah, we had everything but frogs and locusts up here. It was nasty, Joe.
And the funniest, because I was talking to people in the chat rooms that I talk on, and all over the country, it seemed, everywhere that people were talking about, it was raining. So you wonder if maybe God's doing a little crying for America here.
Yeah, or you know, hey, hold off on the celebrations just yet. The party hasn't started.
Oh, you know, it was funny when you were talking about having some fun with the with the religious people. I remember during the whole Schiavo thing, where they were all, you know, protesting around the hospital, and there was a great picture. I have it on my site somewhere, in the archives. But there was a guy there who was just, you know, pretending to be one of them, holding up the sign, and the big sign that said, "We are idiots." And he had this great bloom eating grin on his face. You know, and mm-hmm. it was so funny. And, you know, you wonder if they really saw that, or if what they did to the guy if they found out what he was holding up. But, you know, these guys are just nuts. I keep remembering the scene from Norma Rae, one of my favorite movies, when Norma wants to use the church she had grown up in to hold a union meeting. And the pastor refused her because there were going to be black people, and he didn't want to have no black people in that church.
Right.
And, you know, also he was against the union to begin with anyway, so. But Norma said, well, I'll get to take my business elsewhere. And he says, well, we'll miss your voice in choir, Norma. And she said, it'll be raised up somewhere else. And that's what I keep hoping with some people, that we just start to raise the voice up somewhere else. You know, if your church has gotten that bad, it's time to get out.
Yeah.
And, you know, what bothers me even more are these big mega churches. And we had one, my wife and I went to one, because my wife was much more religious than I, and I went just, you know, for her sake. And it was this big church up in Alpharetta.
Mm-hmm.
And it was run by a guy named Anley Stanley, who seems like a pleasant enough dude. I really don't know a whole lot about him. Even Googling him, I didn't.
Is that the Dr. Stanley I see from time to time on Sunday morning?
It's his son.
Ah.
And apparently what happened was, from what I learned, his son kind of broke away from his father because his father continued to preach even though he'd had a divorce. So the son is playing the more moral card. But you know what scared me? First of all, two things scared me about this church. One was that you would not know it was a church. You absolutely would not know it was a church walking into place. There wasn't a crucifix in sight. There wasn't any kind of religious symbology anywhere. It had two auditoriums, some of the biggest auditoriums with some of the most expensive sound systems.
Jumbotrons.
Oh, my God. Just you know, I work in professional broadcasting stuff, okay, putting together big broadcast studios. These guys had stuff that would rival some of the things that I've worked on.
Oh yeah, and well, there's no, you know, there's no crucifixes or anything, Joe, because those things aren't about anything remotely relating to the life of Yeshua. They are cults of personality, pure and simple.
Yeah, and you know, Mr. Stanley seemed to have a kind of thing going for that, because everybody was, you know, Andy this and Andy that, and you know, and again, what was interesting though was that I didn't go to this particular service, but my wife went to the one right after we started the war in Iraq. And you would think that this guy would be fire and brimstone, kill the infidels, whatever. But apparently, according to my wife, what he was saying was that, you know, this land has been ruled over by empires throughout history, and it'll all fail. They'll all fail. They always have. He was talking more about Afghanistan than Iraq. But it was interesting that he was making that point. But it just bothers me that these guys have so much money. That's what scares me.
Well, if this was the true republic that it was set out to be, we would tax the church. You know, and I know that might irritate some people, but what a dodge! What a beautiful, beautiful dodge!
You know, maybe I'll do like some guys have done. Just start up some goofy church, just to collect some money. You know, people always bug me about why I don't have any money.
That's already happened. Mark Perkle's doing that with the Church of Reality.
Yeah, but, you know, he's kind of semi-serious about that, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, or like the Church of Bob,
The Church of the Subgenius?
Subgenius, yeah. Well, of course, they're all gone now. You know, the spaceship came and take them away. That was like in 1997.
Well, apparently they didn't get some of them, because I had a story here 6 months or so ago, where a woman had her children taken away from her because of nudie pictures from the Church of the Subgenius. Kid you not.
Well, they're supposedly gone. That's their credo.
We're gone now. All except the guy from Devo who does the music for the Rugrats.
I lost my train of thought. What the heck was I talking about? I hate it when that happens.
Setting up mega churches and you know, making a little scratch that way.
Yeah. You know, it occurred to me that if I had no conscience at all, I could make a fortune. And I think that's really the only requirement in this country, is that you absolutely throw away every sense of ethics you have if you want to make a quick buck. Because there are things that anybody can do, really.
Oh, Joe, as a budding teenager, I was anointed, you know, and I tried it, you know, but I couldn't go. I couldn't do it, because at some base level, you absolutely have to, in order to be a minister who seriously wants to make the big coin, you have got to have at the very base of your soul larceny.
Right. And I remember, many years ago, I was watching a documentary, and I wish I could remember the name of the documentary, because I'd like to see it again to confirm it. but they were talking about the rise of the religious right in the country. And this was done probably in the mid-'80s or so, maybe 20 years ago. And what they were saying in the documentary was that Jimmy Carter was actually going to start criminal investigations on the Falwells and the Robertsons and the Swaggerts and all these other people that are basically con artists. I don't care what anybody says, they're con artists. And they realized that the gravy train was going to end if they got investigated.
Yeah.
So that's when they started to get politically active. And then what happened was they realized that they could make a lot more money if instead of ripping off the old ladies with from, you know, their Social Security checks, they were the ones writing the Social Security checks. You know what I'm saying?
Ain't that the truth?
Or getting it from the government, which is what they're doing now thanks to the faith-based initiatives, you know. And, you know, it's all good money for them. And, in fact, one of the reasons why the religious people left the old country to come to America in the first place was because of the cozy relationship between the Church of England and the British government.
Sure.
You know. And they didn't want to establish any religion. In fact, that was the whole the term separation of church and state, which they're now screaming like bloody murder that it's not in the Constitution anywhere, it came from a letter that Thomas Jefferson
wrote. The letter to the Danbury Baptists.
Right, and they were, because they were fundamentalists, and they were afraid that if America picked one particular religion, they would be out. And that's why they were in favor of the wording of the First Amendment, which is, you know, no established religion, you're free to worship as you please. But I think you're right. I think it's time we start taking a look at these things and taxing them and maybe start just throwing a few of them in jail, because that's all it is fraud.
Yeah, the best we got out of all of that was Jim Baker. You know, why? Why is Jimmy Swaggart not in prison?
And what about Tifton? They caught him.
Oh, yes, they caught him.
And you know, and there's still people who give him money.
Oh, no, wait. They don't just, no. He bought, I mean, I think we're talking about the same guy, and if our good friend David in Middle Tennessee is listening, he'll know. Tipton, that's Trinity Broadcasting.
Yeah.
Well, they bought the little amusement complex that had been known as, and this is in north central Tennessee, it was a Conway Twitty enterprise called Twitty City.
Mm-hmm.
And it, they bought an amusement park. The county, I think Sumner County, Tennessee, billed them property taxes on their amusement park. They took it to court, and now Sumner County Tipton won because roller coasters are apparently now religious artifacts.
Mm.
And Sumner County, Tennessee, is getting absolutely blistered by having to pay back just a horse-gagging load of property taxes to Robert Tipton and his wife, who makes Tammy Faye look like a fashion plate.
Yeah, they're all scum. They're all scum. The sooner they're all behind bars, the better, as far as I'm concerned.
But, you know, the ones that really scare me are Dobson. I have a particular loathing for Dobson. Anybody who tells... One, he's got a Ph.D. from the University of Southern California, and he holds himself out as an expert in child development, Joe, and he has written a book in which he tells fathers to go into the shower with their little sons and expose themselves.
Fun people.
Yeah, he tells parents to beat, and I'm not expanding. It's in the books. You can go and read it. You know, don't believe me. He tells parents to beat their children until they cry what he calls real tears. Now you take a parent. How about a mommy with a little dose of postpartum? How do you define those real tears? You know, those are the sick SOBs that if it was in any other context, Joe, besides religion, the jerks would be off the streets.
Well, we have a reckoning to make as far as religion is concerned, I think, in this country. And just the fact that, and by the way, I don't think it's going to be this weekend, but next weekend. No, in fact, I think it is this weekend. On Air America Radio, they have a religious show. On the weekends.
Yeah, every weekend.
Yeah, and
it's like Sundays at 5 or something.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm going to be on that. They found out about the blog and the radio show, and then they called me up and they wanted to get my opinion, being an agnostic.
Oh, okay. Well, that explains. They never heard prayer meeting.
Yeah.
Prayer meeting Wednesday.
Well, don't ask me why they didn't call you, but maybe...
No, I'm teasing, Joe. I'm teasing.
Maybe it's because I make a big deal sometimes about being an agnostic. You know, I was raised Catholic, and what I like to say is that Catholicism tends to breed agnostics.
Oh, yeah. Well, look at Bart Kopp.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he had the full lodge membership experience.
Well, I was an altar boy. And I went through the whole thing. I even went to Mass one year with the Pope at the Vatican. It was Christmas 88, I think. Christmas 88 or Christmas 89. I don't have a good head for years. But when my Catholic friends would pester me about that, I would say, look, the last time I went to church, it was with the Pope. When was the last time you had a Mass run by the Pope?
Well, you know, how many recovering Southern Baptists out there do you know who have been blessed by the Pope?
Nobody I can think of.
You do now. I was 15 years old standing in Vatican Square when, this is before he got all shot up and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And John Paul stood there and, did the hand jive in front of the crowd. And delivered some Italian and some Polish, and then he said, "And I would especially like to offer my blessing to the young American school students from Alabama." And that was, we were the only ones in the crowd.
And there were how many of you? Not many, were there?
Oh, no. And, you know, maybe three Catholics out of the lot. And so, it's like Bill Murray in Caddyshack. So I got that going for me, which is good.
There you go.
So, you know, I mean, I don't mean to be overly hostile, and I'm not. I'm not hostile to faith, Joe.
I'm not hostile to faith either. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, anybody can believe anything they want to believe. It's none of my business what somebody believes. And growing up in the Northeast as I did, people did not wear their religion on their sleeves like they do down here. I mean, you know, however many Catholics there were, and I know there were a lot, people didn't go around saying Jesus this, Jesus that, you know, praise Jesus every other sentence, you know. But you get down here, and people, you know, it's a requirement for them to say something and to try to change it. And it's like, look, I'm not interested. It's you know, I believe the way I believe, and you know, it's my business. But they don't want to see it that way.
Well, you know, I mean, that's like the athletes who go running into the end zone in the Super Bowl and point at heaven and like kiss their fingers and you know
yeah, like
and mouth thank you Jesus you know
but, you know of all the things I remember a couple of years ago Trot Nixon, player for the Boston Red Sox, he had hit a big homer to win a game for the Red Sox, and you know he just went out and said, "Oh, I didn't swing that bat, it was Jesus swinging that bat." And you know, when he made an error, I said, "Did Jesus make you drop that ball, Trot?"
Yeah, that was Jesus on the short hop.
You know, it's like, ah. And you know, you can't get people to understand that maybe it's not quite so simple as they see. So, I don't know. It's a big thing, and it's something that this country is going to have to deal with in a big, nasty way.
Well, I mean, I take very seriously remarks like. Barack Obama made last week saying that, you know, not all faith is bad and we have to reach out to the faith community. I'm okay with that as long as we understand who we're reaching out to.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm not going to reach out to the Dobsons of the world. You know, I got into it with Jim that one time on my show.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm just like, look, you know, I understand where you're coming from, but, you know, the truth of the matter is that there are some people that are simply not going to be turned. And, you know, we have to understand that, and we have to pick the fights that we can win. And there are people out there who would be willing to listen. I mean, my wife was one. She was a total Bush person and a total Republican, but she had only had very limited knowledge about politics, only basically what her family told her and what little she gleaned from the local news every night. And when I explained to her and proved to her a lot of the things that were going on with Clinton and all that stuff, she was like, "Oh my goodness!" In fact, I actually talked her out of voting for Bush in 2000. That was a big surprise.
Oh.
So yeah, she wound up voting for Nader, but you know, it was better than.
Well, in Georgia, it didn't matter.
Yeah. Well, she was in California at the time.
Okay, as long as she wasn't in Florida.
Yeah. And actually, I knew a guy who voted for Nader in Florida. I almost smacked him. I said, "You schmuck!
You yutz!"
Not to what I mean.
Yeah.
Oh man, and you know what I keep thinking, what scares me, and as we bounce around from subject to subject, I think the next controversial state for 2008, that's going to be California.
Oh, I think, yeah, California and Pennsylvania. Those are my bets.
Yeah. I don't know about Pennsylvania, but California pretty definitely, because they're fighting real hard to get them D-Bolt machines in there. And it's funny how it works. Wherever there are these D-Bolt machines are, there's always some problems.
Oh, well, it's kind of designed that way, don't you think?
Yep. And, you know, you're talking about, you know, going in there and hacking stuff and getting emails. I have been a vocal proponent, and if I could do it myself, I would, of somebody going in there and just hacking the machine in some ridiculous fashion. Let you know, my personal example is let Mickey Mouse win a major election somewhere.
Yeah.
Just do something so that it's so obvious and so clear.
Yeah, but that guy goes to the gulag, who does that goes to the gulag for life, Joe.
Sometimes you got to take that chance, man. Sometimes you got to take that chance.
Well, that's the thing. There's a lot of people out there willing for somebody else to take that chance.
Yeah, I know. If I could do it myself, I would. I'm just not that technically skilled at it. I wouldn't know. You know, by the time I would get, by the time I would figure it out, I'd be in jail for some other reason anyway. So, you know, it's just the way it is, man.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I know how it goes. You know, the kind of luck where, you know, you get arrested buying the pantyhose to go do the bank robbery.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Well, listen, before I head on out, I just want to make it clear that there will not be a new show this Saturday, because that's when I'll be arriving in Chicago.
Right, in transit.
And hopefully, with luck, fingers crossed, the Saturday after that is when I will be rebroadcasting. And I think one of my listeners is sending me a new computer. I'm not 100% sure. He said it was going to be a surprise, but he was the guy that sent me my current computer. So I think, and I've been mentioning that I needed an upgrade. So I think.
Well, wonderful. I think that, you know, there are some production issues and things like that, and I think it'll make things decidedly easier.
Right, and you know, it'll be great also because my roommate up there, who is known as the Thane of Fascistan, and I love that name.
Is that the Thane?
The Thane. That's who set me up there.
Oh, I remember him from the Bart Cop chat.
Yep, and he's one of the regular members there. He hasn't shown up very much because he's had some technical issues plus some health issues. But he's the one who got the extra place up there for me. So
we gotta turn Bart Cop Chad onto the horn.
Yeah, we gotta you know get them all. You know, one of the Fudd from Hawaii. What he's been trying to do is to get together a series of servers like they have on Undernet and Dialnet, where they're all different servers, but they're all interconnected.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, what he wants to have is one network of servers like that all run IRC chat, and it's all for left wingers. And you have different channels for different programs and different websites, stuff like that. And I think that's a really great idea. And it's a way to, and because it would be a network of servers, you can actually take measures against the trolls.
Wow!
To keep them from getting on and to keep them from disrupting, so that we can have a place where we can talk and not be interrupted. Because when I go into the chat rooms, some of the ones that I go into. And if you really want to see the crazies, go on in any Undernet server and go into politics. And that, you know, that ought to be named Bush Cult, because that's exactly what it is. And it's all the Bush people in there. And if you want to hear some of the crazy things, I mean, there were guys in there who were screaming bloody murder that they ought to go out there and kill everybody who worked for the New York Times.
Oh, I know. I've got a thing here in the stack that I didn't get to it's just disgusting.
So, you know, and then... If, as they get more backed into a corner, they're going to get more dangerous, man.
Well, they are. I mean, this particular thing, I don't know if you saw it or not, Joe. It was from Daily Kos. Right-wingers are encouraging readers to hunt down info about New York Times editors' children.
I saw that. Hunt down, do the country a favor. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's every time, every cotton-picking time, Joe, that I think these people have sunk to a level that nobody could sink to and still call themselves members of the human race, they prove me wrong and find a lower level of hell.
Well, you know, Mary Scott O'Connor wrote a great post a few months ago called Slouching Towards Kristallnacht. And if things get bad enough, that's what we're heading towards. There's going to be a Kristallnacht moment coming up.
Yeah. My pal over at comearmageddon.blogspot.com touched on a similar issue recently, and you know, I love reading that blog because it lights my fires up and lets me know that you know, we it's like, you know, Close Encounters, we are not alone.
Right.
And, you know, the microphone can be a lonely thing from time to time. Well, Joe, travel safely, my brother, will you?
I will do that.
And let us know you arrived alive, okay?
I will give you a call next week after I'm all settled and nice and cozy with the Thane, and let you know how things are in Chicago.
And my best regards to the Thane.
I will tell him.
All right, bye now.
Bye-bye.
And onward, the last few minutes, let's go to Wayne. Hey, Wayne, welcome to the show.
Hey, buddy, how you doing?
Doing good, you?
Oh, good, real good. I finally got my internet back, so I got to listen to, well, part of the show. Anyway, but who was it? Luke early on was talking about that Bennett and...
Oh, yeah.
Now, who was that? Who was the woman?
Dana Priest.
Okay. She tore him up, man. She tore him up. I'll tell you what, there's another... There's nothing like an intelligent woman to be able to deal with these pompous people, because a woman could put that, like Bill Bennett, in his place quicker than any man could in a minute. I mean, you could see it on their face. Another one.
Well, with right wing men, they're not used to having women speak to them.
That's exactly.
The woman silently sets his.
They're sitting there in awe, like the audacity.
Yeah, set my meal down and go back to the kitchen, woman.
Exactly, exactly. I'll tell you another one who's really good at that is the editor of The Nation, Katrina
Vandenhoevel.
Yes. I mean, she has set, is it George Wills?
Yeah.
Back in his chair more than once.
I love watching their heads snap back like they're in the space shuttle or something.
Yeah,
what?
Exactly. I mean, they're like shocked. It's so indignant. You know, that's really good, man. That's really good. There's
Well, I'm going to go and watch it over at Crooks and Liars.
I couldn't see it now.
Oh, is it not? Okay. But you've had trouble with your internet.
Yeah, I know, but, well, yeah, exactly. It might have been there in an
I think Ted Stevens got your internets, man.
Who?
Ted Stevens, senator from Alaska. I still haven't played that audio that our good friend David in Maine turned us on to. I'm going to play that tomorrow night. This is something that needs to be heard by, you know, don't trust Republicans with technology. If it doesn't dispense money, they're not interested in it.
Well, I'm interested. Now you got me interested in what he had to say.
Oh, blog.wired.com, I think. If you can get into the chat room, let me ask the News Ninja. News Ninja, can you find the link to Ted Stevens' idiocy, please? I bet you the News Ninja will find it for you.
Okay, I haven't been able to get in the chat room either, so.
Oh, your internets are in bad shape, man.
Yeah. Well, my two Ethernet cards were disabled. That's what all, you know.
Yeah, brother.
Right, and I enabled them and everything worked. But there's something crawling around in there that likes to do vicious things to me.
Yeah, it sounds like you need a phone call from Computo.
Yeah, exactly.
Wayne,
be a big lightning bolt.
Well, I thought we had enough of those last night.
Yeah, we did, didn't we?
Yeah. Oh God, me and the kids, we got so soaking wet.
Oh,
and
did you go? You went out to watch fireworks?
Oh yeah, I'm real dumb.
Yeah,
but you know,
I bought 3 steaks and baked potatoes and stuff, and I bought a bag of charcoal and all that jazz. And it started raining. I mean, it was raining so hard, I said, well, the hell with that, I'll broil on. Well, then the power went out. So we ate pizza. I went to Pizza Hut.
Yeah, because they've always got power. They got like diesel-powered army generators.
Right, they got a special deal, too, you know, corporate America. Anyway, I just wanted to bring that up. I'm glad Luke saw that. I think that was, and it may be on Crooks and Liars. You have to go look.
All right, cool.
You know. I'll be talking to you, buddy.
All right.
Have a good evening.
Bye now.
Bye.
Well, that's it. What a fun evening. My particular thanks to Michael Pollan, author of The Omnivore's Dilemma. My thanks to WVEA President.